15, I'm sorry.
Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gable Bentoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chan. I'm going to have to drop that pretty soon. But anyways, hey, we had a great weekend of fights. A lot of underdogs, made their breakthrough. I mean, great stories out of boxing. I had a chance to go on Punches and Bunches and Tony Whitby, and we talked a little bit about, What is it about boxing that excites us? You know, what is it about boxing that entices us, that intrigues us, that draws us in? And if you look at Alejandro Perez and you look at Issa Smith and you look at Lamont Peterson, all three of them have a great storyline. You know, Lamont Peterson fighting on Friday Night Fights, the redemption with Holt, and here's a guy that had a suspension. He was doing the VADA testing, so he was out of the game for some time, and you saw the aggression, you saw the want, the comeback of it. Then Alejandro Perez on Showbox, he comes out. Here's a kid that has been struggling. He's been fighting. He came down here to the States. The only reason to be here in the United States was become a world champion, and he had to fight through everything, and he went up through every obstacle, and even when the guys had the chance to shine, he's choked a little bit, but this time he had his opportunity, he seized it, and guess what happens? And then you have Issa Smith, who we've had numerous times here on Leaving the Ring, and we've done articles about as well, and we've talked to extensively about his triumphs and his tributes of what he needed to do to overcome, and honestly, the guy at one time, if you talked to him last year, he never thought the time was going to come because he had, promotional problems, he had management problems, he couldn't get fights, he couldn't get this, and then to see all three of these guys all in a row, like dominoes, to finally get that goal that they're all reaching and hoping to grasp one day was just phenomenal, man. Just great and stuff, We got a great show for everybody. We got Mike Alvarado that's going to be coming on by 5:15. He just called me right now. I let him know I'm going to call him in a few minutes. And then we got a bunch of other guys that are going to be coming through here on Leaving the Ring. I want to introduce my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, the man that always co-hosts is with me here. He's been with me for a very long time. Gabriel, what's up, brother?
How you doing, man? Our other guests? I'm doing good, man. How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing great, man. Beautiful weather. Just got home from work. I want to give a quick shout-out to my local union brothers, Pipe Fitters and Plumbers, local 442. Guys always support me, and, they've been actually tuning in and listening to the radio show. So big shout out to those guys, man, the blue collar guy men that make up our sport as well, that spend all the money to come down and watch fighters get in the ring and dish it all out and put their lives on the line for pure entertainment for ourselves.
Well, I'm excited about the show today. We've got a kind of a mixed bag. It's a little different. We've got Mike Alvarado, Hugo Centeno, who's taking on Keandre Leatherwood, who we also have on with his father and trainer Pete. And we also got a fighter named Anatoly Dudchenko. He trains out of my gym, out of the Fortune Gym, and he just won a big fight last week. Anatoly is he's just one of those guys, you always see him working on his game in the gym. He's out of the Ukraine. I can't even pronounce the name of Dnipropetrovsky. No, geez, I'll have him pronounce the name of his where he lives or where he's from. He lives in Los Angeles. He's 18. Two losses, no draws, but he's got 13 knockouts. He's got a brutal right hand, and he knocked out Sabu Balagu last week at the Quiet Canyon in Montebello, California, to win the vacant NABA USA light heavyweight title, which means he's going to get a higher ranking. He's 34 years old, but a young 34. Dude, you see this guy in the gym. It's like somewhere between like a Pirog and like a Martinez kind of style, the hands down, almost squared up to you. And the shots kind of come from underneath, and then they come from over the top. And he drops this dude. I'm watching the fight right now. And I actually just tweeted it out, Dudchenko versus Sabu Balagov, my last tweet, if you're following us on Twitter. Check this fight out. The action really starts to happen late in the fight, but his style is really unusual. So I'm excited to have him on for the first time. And as always, you know, Hugo Boss, 805 on Twitter, Hugo Centeno. That's going to be fun. And I've never actually really talked to BJ Flores. I think fight fans are kind of up and down about him. We're going to have him at the 7 o'clock hour at the top there. Keandre Leatherwood at the 7:15. With Flores, you know, it'll be interesting. I think he is probably going to get some interesting questions thrown at him, and then we'll see how it goes. I think it's going to be fun, dude. I'm excited. It was a beautiful day in L.A., and it's going to be an even more beautiful night.
Absolutely. You know, and just a reminder really quick to our listeners that if you are at work or you're on the road, hey, download the app. You can get out of the Google Store. You just have to type in all capital letters, L-I-I-T-R. Or you can look at my front page on Twitter, and you can scan the QR scan there, and automatically it will download for you. And you can keep up on everything that we're doing. You can see our Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and you can hear us live, or you can connect with us. You can automatically call into the show, which would be 347-215-7598. And you can follow us, like I said. You can follow the articles that are on our site, and you get a notification immediately, an hour or a few hours before the show comes on, so you know exactly what's going to be on the show. So anyways, fight fans, call in. Let's talk some boxing here before we call Mike Alvarado on the Mile High, who's going to be facing Brandon Rios. Again, the rematch, an anticipated match. The first one was beyond words we can explain. All we could say is it was war. And punches were thrown, and these two guys, we all knew exactly what they were going to bring to the table. There was no mystery of what both of these men were going to do. The rematch, though, a lot of times, and I got a lot of emails about this, was that, do you think the rematch is going to live up to the first one? Because mostly the rematches don't. You know what, strangely, I don't know what you think, Gabriel, but I honestly believe it is going to live up to the first one. Just because of the fact that these are two guys that like to bang. These are two guys that like to leave it in the ring. These are two guys that like to test themselves. They don't know any other way to do their job, which is to get in there and get dirty.
Guys, these guys are just made for each other. It's going to be a hell of a fight. I really can't I'm kind of conflicted because I'm not going to be there. I would like to be there, but and I could be if I wanted to, but then, you know, it's also my 40th birthday, and I'm going to do something else other than watch two other guys beat each other up. Man, it's going to be – I was there for the first one, and it was – each round, it just kept ascending, you know. It was just like a violent volcano, you know. It just kept – you're like, wow, I think it's going to explode. And then finally something happened. Mike got hit with the right shot, started to go, and then there was like a low blow. There was like a weird moment. And then the assault continued as they all kind of looked at each other, the ref and the two fighters, and then it continued, and I think logically the fight, it was over at that point. I always wonder what would have happened if that low blow had been called and Mike had like maybe a few seconds to kind of breathe and regroup. But I think by then, too, that he had fought the wrong fight in some sense. I'm very excited to talk to him tonight.
I remember immediately after that fight, there was a lot of fight fans that felt it was stopped premature, that it could have gone a little longer. But then you go back and look at the punches that were thrown from both men. I mean, both guys were throwing just some really heavy bombs. And both guys, every punch that was thrown, both guys had really bad intentions behind it. I'm really curious to hear what Mike Alvarado this time around thinks. I mean, does he think that first game plan was the right one, and it was just one of those it was one of those situations that he couldn't avoid, you know, because he already knew going into this fight that one of them had to go. One of them was going to have to be stopped. This wasn't going to be going the distance. Both fighters knew that they weren't going to rely on three judges to judge their destiny. Second time around, let's see if he still has the same mentality. Let's see if exactly whether or not he believes that, you know what, it's my turn this time to get the stoppage, or if he thinks, you know, I think I got a box and that's what I've been working on. So a lot of curiosity here for Mike Mile High Alvarado. Let's back to the fight fan first really quick before we call in Mike Alvarado here on Leaving the Ring. Let's go with the guy that's been on hold for quite some time here on the show. Let's area code 860. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing? CT,
what's up, brother?
Hey, how you doing, Dave? How you doing, Gabe?
Good.
Yeah, since you guys brought up Mike Alvarado, I'm definitely looking forward to the rematch. I picked Rios in the first fight. I just thought that, you know, I think Alvarado in the rematch definitely can't fight the same way. He knows that himself. I think Rios, when it comes to fighting that type of style, his will just goes along with that type of fight. The way he just keeps coming forward, and the way Rios can take a damn shot, it's almost like, how the hell can he stand up, especially that right hand that Alvarado hit him with? I forgot what round it was in. I want to say the second or third. I don't know how Rios stood up to that punch, but I think Alvarado, the second time around, has to make adjustments into boxing Rios. So, you know, kind of mixing up both, but I think the first time he tried to prove his, you know, his manhood too much against, you know, Rios to see who could take whose punch.
I want to know if Mike was just as surprised as the rest of us and how Brandon was able to take those shots from him, because some of those shots there would have definitely have stopped another bean. Rios, he was eating them, taking them, and he kept coming forward, and he had a grin on his face. And I've always wondered, when you see a guy like that, you know, mentally, what does that do to the fighter that's throwing the punches, to the guy that's catching the punches? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's almost like a modern-day Roberto Duran type fighter, you know? It's one of those guys who just take a punch like T-2000, you hit him, and then he just keeps coming forward. But I think Alvarado's definitely got to box a little bit more. I think he has the better boxing skills out of the two, Alvarado. Looking forward to the new match, but honestly, the way I see the fight going, I think Alvarado makes changes and does well the first few rounds, just like he did the first fight. But I think, you know, going towards the later rounds again, those punches from Rios and, you know, the way he just keeps bringing it, I think he's going to stop Alvarado again.
Man, I'm excited. I cannot wait. I know Gabriel's not going to make it out there, Las Vegas on March 30th, but you know what? I'm booking my hotel. I'm flying out there. I'm going to tell you this. I'm not going out there as media. I'm going out there as a fan, man. I want to go and enjoy myself, sit down, relax, and not worry about deadlines or anything else like that, because this is a fight that I kicked myself in the ass because I didn't go the first time. This time, I'm not missing out on some really good action that's going to be there face-to-face, man. It's going to be an exciting night. I cannot wait. CT, I'm going to put you on hold because we're going to be calling in Mike Mile High Alvarado right now in about 2 to 3 minutes.
All right, thank you.
Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598 if you want to ask Mike Alvarado a question. Tweet us here on Leaving the Ring or Gabriel Montoya, and if we can fit in the question, if it's going to relate to what we want to talk about, we'll absolutely ask the question to Mike Alvarado. We're going to call him in about 2 more minutes here on the show. Don't forget, later on the show, we do our fight prediction and our fight schedule here on Leaving the Ring. Again, 347-215-7598. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my partner, Gabriel Montoya. 2 more minutes, Mike Alvarado. If you haven't downloaded the app, well, let's get to it so that you can listen to the show and you can call directly from the app here on Leaving in the Ring.
And I muted myself again. I'm pretty stoked. I've kind of got everybody's information that we're gonna be sending out tonight. There's a few of the guys aren't on Twitter, but like Anatoly Dudchenko's not on Twitter, and Mike Alvarado definitely is on Twitter. I just haven't tracked his Twitter name down as I'm putting it together, but. There's one other guy that's on the show, Keandre Leatherwood. I guess hasn't made a Twitter account yet. I mean, some people use it, you know, as a way to connect with the fans. I know Ishii Smith is a guy that's very vocal with the fans or very interactive. I feel bad we kind of got into it. I was a little rude to him. I'm going to handle that pretty soon. But what? I was getting at,
you
a little rude. I was a little dismissive about his face, and that was probably not right of me. But what he was doing was kind of wrong, and maybe not so much an apology, but a clarification is needed. But I was thinking about what happened earlier this week in the Rigondeau case and Donaire, you know, Rigondeau and Donaire testing, you know, VADA, USADA. Then it was they were going to do both, and they weren't going to do any. And where the hell did Rigo go? And it seemed like he was kind of like, it was like a Mentos commercial, you know, and like Vada papers were chasing Rigo around, and, you know, he was hiding behind mannequins, and, you know, they'd see him on the stairs across the mall and have a cute moment. But ultimately, you know, the Vada papers did catch up to him, and he signed him, and then Monday they took a blood test from him. But what I found was interesting was how Donaire, I think some people were critical of it, but I was privy to a lot of the story, and it's kind of strange because I'm in the midst of writing this book about drugs and everything in boxing and what's been going on, and I've kind of capped where I want the book to end, but at the same time, this is kind of a part of it. And so I'm kind of watching it from this wide perspective, what was going on, and while on a mini vacation at the same time, and also watching what was going on with Provodnikov and Bradley. It was almost the exact same things that these guys go in the media and they declare, I'm doing the testing, such and such testing, whatever brand. But there's a process to it. You got to fill out the paperwork. You got to talk to them on the phone, either, you know, group. You got to make a statement to Vada, like write it out, the fighter, that they want to do this testing and they're volunteering to enter the program and they're agreeing to certain things. And everybody has to turn in a list of the supplements that they take and the whereabouts for them, where you're going to be, where you're training, all your phone numbers, everything. And then they have to be, at least for Vada, I'm pretty sure this is how USADA works, they have to be accepted into the program. This could all happen very fast if everybody's good about the paperwork. Like, it happened like in a day. But
right.
If you screw around and like, oh, I want to, you know, I can understand the need for it in Spanish, but then what happened after that? And did you really want testing? And then it was interesting seeing Pedro Diaz throw out, we want USADA testing at the press conference. That's fair. One, I mean, look at the shadow that's been going on, you know, surrounding USADA. Dude, read the paper or read my stuff at least. But two, you know, Pat English had just the lawyer for Gary Hyde, the manager of Rigondeaux, had just released a letter the week before trashing USADA. So, like, dude, like, know your shit. Like, know what team you're on and what they all think before you kind of open your mouth. And what's further is USADA has a deadline. Vada, I think they're newer and so they're trying to establish, and so they picked up an account. That's basically what they did. They saw an opportunity and they did it. And I think the things that they do, they can, in the short period of time, they'll be testing Provodnikov and Bradley, which was finally finalized today. Bradley started like a few days ago, and Provodnikov finally signed up and got approved today. You know, they can at least get something out of the blood work they're doing because they use it for other things besides testing. But
right.
The point is, we got to call them in. But I'll wrap it up as the phone's dialing. There's a process to all this, and I guess the original point was I found it very interesting how Nonino Donaire used social media to get his point across and almost use it like a weapon.
Right.
It's a little bit controversial, but it was effective, and I don't think Rigo would blood samples on Monday had that not.
Yeah, can we please speak to Mike Alvarado?
It's Mike Alvarado.
What's up, Mile High? How you doing, brother?
Doing all right. Getting to the gym, second session of the day.
Great, man. Hey, thanks for coming on. You know, I've been wanting an interview for quite some time, and especially
right on, yeah.
You know, this rematch, anticipated rematch among all fight fans. The first one, man, was just an awe. It was all, you know, an awe. It was a great back and forth war. Mike, let me ask you my first question here, Mike. Is that, you know, we had a caller a little earlier, and he was saying a little bit about how your punches were landing, and they were hellacious shots. And my question, I've always wanted to ask this, is what goes through your mind when you see a guy being able to take your best shots, kind of grin at you a little bit, and keeps coming forward? What keeps going through it? Is it almost like, okay, you're kind of making fun of me, so I'm going to keep doing it until I hurt you? Or is it a surprise?
Oh, it's a little surprise. I wasn't too shocked about it. I know he was tough. I know he could take a good punch, but I was just still sticking to my game plan, still digging deep. I just knew how to dig a little deeper and keep throwing even twice as many shots to keep, you know, keep them off me, keep throwing them shots and stick to my game plan. So it didn't really throw me out of my game. I just knew I had to dig a little bit more and try to just keep fighting my fight, that not fall into his, let my pride get in the way and fall into his way of fighting. I wasn't real shocked about it.
At any time in that fight, did you feel that the game plan was slipping and that you had to step it up?
Oh, I knew I had to stick to my game plan. I knew I was kind of getting wheeled into the way his style fighting was. Just certain little techniques and a couple adjustments that I knew I had to make that I had to really keep in order to make the fight go more my way than keep fighting his fight.
Do you think some of it – welcome to the show, Mike. It's been a while since we've talked. This is Gabriel Montoya,
yeah.
Max Boxing, and Leaving in the Ring.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good, man. Nice to hear from you.
Yeah, thanks.
It felt like – I mean, the fight was a masterpiece. I mean, I know you'd rather be on the winning end of it, but it was a beautiful thing. I mean, it was just – I was in awe, like Dave said. I was there live, ringside,
yeah.
Going, wow.
Right.
But it did seem like – we all had expectations going into the fight that this was going to be savage, and people kept saying it's going to guaranteed to live up to the expectations. Do you feel as a fighter that compromised your game plan a little bit, and that you gave us a little bit too much of what we wanted, and more a little less of what you should have done?
It might have a little bit. I think it had a little bit to do with that. I knew my game plan was to stay, you know, keep him out a little bit more at bay than to be inside with him and let him have more of a chance, which he got that shot off and made the fight go more his way. But I don't know, the fight just ended up the way it did. I was just trying to, you know, control it my way and keep up with my pace. There was a couple minor adjustments I could have made, and yeah.
And at this point, you know, you feel, I mean, you have a whole other camp. You've moved past it. I mean, is it fuel for you? Is it something that you go back and you keep studying? Or is it something that you put out of your mind and just say, whole new fight, and this time we're going to approach it, you know, in a whole new way?
I'm going to fight pretty much the same way. I'm going to make some adjustments that I know that I should have done. That if I would have just stood, you know, the way my game plan was, and just a couple little adjustments, just change a couple little things. Nothing too drastic, nothing too crazy, but just certain little movements that I know will overcome the way his style of fighting is. He's going to come the same way. I'm going to come the same way. It's going to be another good all-out war fight. So it's going to be another exciting, longer fight this time around.
I think a lot of fight fans are kind of excited right now that you said that, you know, you're going to kind of come back out the way you did the first time around with some minor adjustments. I think that's one thing that a lot of fight fans, when hearing, you know, when we announced that you were going to be on, a lot of fight fans were emailing us and asking, do you think the rematch is going to live up to the first one? And I honestly was like, I think it will, because I don't think you guys can change your guys' colors at all. I think you guys are who you are, and you're going to absolutely do it. But let me ask you, Mike, knowing already what Brandon Rios brings to the table, because obviously the first time around, you don't know exactly what to expect. Now you know what to expect. Is it a little bit more easier to now kind of go into this match knowing what you're headed up against?
It kind of in my mental mind to stay. I feel like it'll be a lot more easier for me to think this through and know the situations. We're going to be put in the exact same type of situations. It's just on me to make those adjustments to overcome in those situations to be the better fighter at that time.
You think you can be a little more relaxed and absorb shots a little bit better too, I imagine, or roll with shots a little better.
Yeah, I know what to expect. I know his style. I know how he throws. He can't change too much up. I mean, I was a better all-around fighter. I was winning that fight. He just caught me. He got that good punch. He caught me. You know, the tables went his way. The cards went his way, and couldn't really do nothing about that. But, you know, just keep doing what I'm doing.
I think the fight, even fans are saying on Twitter, it could go either way. It really still is a 50-50 fight. And
right.
I'm very excited about it. I don't think it's diminished by how the first fight ended at all. Do you think, you know, that's what I've always wanted to ask you. Towards the end of the fight, you kind of got hurt along the ropes, but then there was a low blow, and you all kind of looked at each other. I don't know if you remember this or I'm just imagining this, but it seemed like you, the ref, and Rios kind of paused because of the low blow, and then he kind of continued again, and then the fight ended. Do you remember that, or do you have thoughts on that?
I don't really remember the low blow. I haven't really studied too much of it yet.
Yeah.
I'm getting back on my film studies real shortly. I just know as quick as he hurt me, the instant that he hurt me, I got my head back just as quick as he hurt me. I mean, he was catching more than a couple shots, 3 or 4 shots. But, you know, I was trying to come back to fight still and show heart. I don't think that ref allowed me to
fight through the
come
moment.
Back and fight through that. Yeah, exactly.
So do you agree with the fans, some of the fans out there that believe that this was stopped premature? I mean, do you agree with them a little bit, or were you?
I do agree. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was, you know, being in there and going through that, I would be honest and say, yeah, you know, it was a good stoppage. You know, I was hurt. I wasn't able to continue. No, I was trying to fight still. I was trying to come back. The ref stopped me. I'm coming back and trying to fight. I mean, I could see if, you know, he let it go just a little bit longer and he caught me with another shot, stunned me, put me against the ropes and then stopped it or something. But I didn't get that opportunity. So, I mean, it was premature, I don't believe. Or I know it was.
I can understand that. I mean, it was. Yeah, it wasn't even like Castillo Corrales, which a lot of people kind of compare it to, where you could literally see his shoulders drop, his arms drop.
You went limp, right?
Yeah, it was about to go bad, and it was. He kind of caught it. He pulled you out right before that moment. So yeah, I can see that. At least that way, though, we do get the second fight, and you do get a nice payday again, and you get revenge again. I mean, this could end up being
yeah.
Yeah, it reminds me of Vasquez Marquez, and they kind of went
right.
Six and then six, and then it was the most epic thing you ever saw.
What did you leave with knowing of Brandon? Like, what did you leave with the respect of him? And going into this fight, what is the respect that's left out about with Brandon Rios now?
I think even though I knew I was out landing, I was out throwing punches on him. I was working a little bit more harder too. I'll leave him with his will. Like he just kept coming and coming, even though regardless. Even though all the shots he was taking while he was coming, I know he still wanted it. He still wanted it. I can't leave that open at all. Like, I have to know that he's going to fight till the very last second, the last round. So, I mean, I have to stay on my toes throughout that whole fight with Brandon. He's tough. He's a warrior. He has a good chin, good heart, and I'm looking forward to another war like that.
Hey, when you were in there and you were throwing all those shots, for a moment did you think, man, this is actually a lot easier than what I thought? I've seen Brandon spar, and when I've watched him, I've noticed he's a guy that just patiently just creeps in. You know, he just walks his way in, and he just waits for that moment so that he kind of sees that he can take over the momentum. When you noticed that about him, is that the major surprise that kind of struck you with him?
Yeah, knowing that I am a strong punter, knowing that he does have to get through some clean shots, knowing that, you know, he's going to get caught with something coming in, and then he kept coming. You know, I was pretty surprised about that. But I was just still trying to stick to my game plan. You know, I just left myself open a little bit more, caught me, and That was a mistake I made. Now, you know, I'm correcting my mistakes, and I'm going to come back a smarter, better fighter this time around.
You don't have to say what they are, and you probably wouldn't anyway, though I said you could, but are there clear things that you see that you were like, damn it, okay, you know, even, I don't know how much of tape you've looked at, but just thinking back on the fight, like if I would have prepared this move or this punch or this thing, if I'd have seen this then, are there clear things like that for you coming into the second fight?
Yeah, everything is a lot more clear. I mean, I put myself back in that ring, and I know what not to do, what to adjust, and what to overcome this time around. So, I mean, it's going to make me a better fighter, make me have a better fight, perform better this time around.
I mean, if I always look at rematches like this, you know, who can improve the most? Like, who has the most capability for growth between the two of you?
Yeah.
Can you make your case as to why you're the guy that can change the most?
I can. I mean, I was the better fighter I'm more talented. I work just as hard. I'm still learning in this boxing game. I'm still learning. There's still technique that's coming to me still that I'm still developing. So I know it was just a learning process for me still, and now it's on me to adjust and come back as a different fighter.
Do you change?
More hungry.
Do you change the sparring partners that you use from the first time around and bring in some other guys that are more, you know, durable and can take more punishment?
Yeah.
That's
one big thing I did change up. Because I did have sparring partners in my last camp that were more of boxers instead of type of fighters that have a style that just come forward. I was sparring with nothing but boxing. I was more of a boxing. I mean, it was a good thing, you know. I was boxing, I was moving, but I still wasn't developing that kind of fight. Like,
right.
I wasn't developing that kind of against that type of style. You know, the style was different to what I was training for, so. It was different when I got in that ring, and I was used to training in a bigger ring. We got in that ring that night at the Home Depot Center, and that ring was small. I was like, holy man.
Right.
I was thrown off already. Like, right when I got in that ring, I was like, what? I was used to sparring in a ring like this. So I'm like, I better move. I better put these shoes on and let's just get to work. Let's get these legs going. I knew he was going to come on. I knew he wanted a war. I don't care.
Right.
He really don't give a shit. He was just like, that's fine. Let's do this. Let the best man win. Let's get it.
Do you go back into this rematch with the mentality of I got to get mine, I got to stop him, or do you go into this one going I just got to get the win?
If I stop him, I stop him. I'm all about the win. You know, I fight to the finish of the last round. I know we're going 12 rounds, so.
But is that going to be sweet victory for you though, Mike? Is that like this? Is that going to be, or if you get a win, let's say you get a decision. Is that just a good victory, or if you get a knockout, is that the sweeter victory?
A knockout's always a sweeter victory. I mean, knowing you got a knockout, you know, it's like, yeah, you feel better by yourself. You're like, cool, you know.
Home runs
for that knockout percentage, it's always better.
Right.
Yeah.
Home runs are always better than, like, runs batted in, like, you know.
Yeah, right? Don't have to go fight all the way.
What's your message?
End it early.
What is your message to Brandon Rios, to Bam Bam? I mean, he's got one over on you right now, but what is your message to him for this rematch?
To just be ready for another war. I'm going to come stronger. I'm more hungry. I want his, though, the same way he took my O. I mean, you blemished my record. I plan on being undefeated. I hate losing. So be ready to check that O.
Yeah.
You know, we're gonna go at it. We're gonna do it again, and you know it's gonna be more of a war this time. It's gonna be a big fight. So
I can't wait. I honestly can't wait for this rematch. This is gonna be another epic war. Gabriel, you got any more questions, brother?
You know, just one last thing. It's kind of occurred to me. We're talking about relaxation. Do you think that energy management is a big key in this fight for you, that maybe you didn't manage your energy quite the way you should have the first time, and this time you might want to meet it out, or like you said, you think it's going to be balls to the wall?
I think I did. I think I did kind of overthrow myself a little bit. That again, I think that has to do with the sparring that I had. I didn't have that pressure type style coming at me all camp, so that's going to be a huge adjustment for me.
Changing the pace of training?
I'm making it change the pace, relax a little bit more, throw sneak more shots in while he's coming in, time him a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So, we got a good game plan coming into this next fight. So
that's going to be fun, man. I'm excited.
Stay hard, and I got heart. So, you know, I still haven't touched that canvas. He wants to call himself, say, he KO'd me or put me down this time. Let's do it the right way. Don't let the ref call the fight for you. I was good.
It's like the
you know, there wasn't no standing eight counts in California, but there is standing eight counts in Las Vegas, I guess.
Yeah, they usually do it out there. That's true. We ain't gonna
leave it up to that. He knows in the back of his head that he shouldn't have left it up to that. He knows I was fine if he watched that tape.
Well, let me ask you this, you know, because obviously there was a little bit of a I don't know if it was a hesitation or, you know, money-wise he was waiting on. Do you think it was had a lot to do with money-wise, or did it have a lot to do with what he had felt and what he witnessed facing you that first time around?
He had a little bit of both. Maybe he wanted a little bit more money.
I don't blame him, man.
He knows he's going to have to fight his ass off again. You know, it's not just an easy fight. You know, this is going to be a lot more tougher fight, knowing that I lost and I'm going to come back even stronger. He knows how I am. He knows the type of fighter that I am. My style is that I always come back stronger every time. I've done that my whole life, so he's going to have to deal with it again.
Well, there you go. Mike Mile High Alvarado here on Leaving the Ring. Anticipated rematch with Bam Bam Rios on March 30th. Get your tickets and go out there and witness another war between these two guys. Hey, Mike, I appreciate you calling in and talking
yes,
to us.
Yes, thank
here,
you
brother.
For having me.
Dude, I wouldn't want to have to deal. I wouldn't want to have to deal with you again. I really appreciate the interview, man. Good luck.
All right, thank you.
All right, then.
All right.
All right, brother.
Appreciate it. Talk to you guys later.
All right, whenever.
All right. I'm going to do it with you guys again. Okay.
All right, brother.
Bye.
Appreciate it.
Again, Mike Mile High Alvarado here with us on Leaving the Ring Radio. If you missed it, don't worry about it. You can catch it on the archives.
Or download it to your phone.
You know, yeah, if you get the Google Store mobile app, the Apple one, the Apple one is coming out very soon. They're just going through some stuff of clearance that I know of. And it was supposed to be last week, but something happened. They have to recode something here on the Apple iTunes so that you can download it to your smartphone, iPhone. Let's keep it rolling, man. Let's keep it going. And, you know, I liked everything that Mike Alvarado had to say. I liked the fact that he said, I'm just going to go back in again. It's got to be a war. And he just clarified exactly what I was talking about a little earlier about can these guys change their colors? I don't think so. And I think Bam Bam Rios, I've never seen him try to box another way. He just comes forward, and he's a patient assassin. That's the only way I can describe him, is this guy's really patient, and Mike Alvarado found that out. I'm a little interested. The plan is to get bigger guys so they can more durable. So if he does allow him to let his hands go, like he did the first time, he's now a little bit more anticipated what's going to come against him this second time around. So this is going to be a really great matchup. Fight fans, you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. 3 hours of boxing talk. We'll patch in a fight fan, but let's first get my partner's, let's get his afterthoughts about the interview of Michael Alvarado here on Leaving the Ring.
I dig him. You know, I like what he had to say. I mean, I'm not sure I agree with him about fighting exactly the same way. I mean, maybe there's going to be certain angles and things that he could do. I think that the uppercut is something that he should explore.
Right.
But I do agree with him that he's still learning and growing. You know, he's had some time off for the ring, you know, when he was doing some time. And he came late to the sport. So he's a fighter that's still developing. He's an interesting guy. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Cintron, and he's got more heart. I think, well, Cintron has heart. I've never agreed with the idea that he doesn't have heart. Anybody that fights does. I'm not saying that he's like Cintron and like he's got like bad luck the way Cintron does. What I'm saying is that he's a guy that was a top wrestler just like Cintron. They kind of look alike a little bit, but they were top wrestlers that became boxers, and they kind of have the same similar kind of skill set, a little bit of that shoulder roll sometimes. They remind me of each other as fighters, and I think, you know, Kermit definitely had more of a that rocket right hand and legit power, like that left uppercut, brutal stuff. But
I'm gonna have to look into that one. I'm not sure if I could say he reminds me of him, but I know where you're going with it.
But in terms of a developing fighter that came from wrestling, and look at the way like they hold their frame sometimes, it is kind of similar. But I'm wondering if Rios is not his Margarito, the guy that just kind of gets that pressure going and ultimately breaks his will, and he just may not, that style may not ever work for him again, you know, like, under any circumstances. Who knows? But I do think that he can get on his toes a little bit more, box from the outside, really control with a hard front side offense, you know, hard jab that sets up that right hand or even blinds him for the uppercut from the rear. Those are, I think, very good weapons. And those things can also set up, you know, that uppercut kind of makes you pause and boom, you dig underneath with a couple body shots and then stick your way out of there with the jab as you're turning and pivoting out. I mean, that's what you should be doing with Brandon. Not get greedy, don't stay in front of them too long. But don't make it like, you know, when you do stand in front of them and flash a combo, make sure it lands with some authority before you use the jab to get out of there, you know, and just rinse and repeat all night. Yeah, you're going to be moving a little bit more, but I think you can do that with an economy of motion. Granted, it's easier said than done, but that should be the plan. And I think Alvarado has the size and everything to do all that. Will he do that, or will he succumb and let that front side offense go and just kind of meet Brandon shield to shield and they just dig it out?
I think that...
That's what's going to happen. I mean, I think that's right. Possible. And if he does, he loses.
Well, I think, if anything, I think the plan and the game plan is always going to work in the beginning. But then when it becomes a bit easy, you fall into that trap. And it could sometimes be like that with Brandon Rios, because just like he mentioned, you know, he was landing more of the shots in the beginning. He was being more active. He felt he was a better boxer. And with Brandon Rios' style and the way he takes punches can be a bit deceiving. You know, looking at the past fighters that Brandon Rios has fought, those guys had more of a work rate than Brandon Rios. But it's the creeping in, the inches that he gains each second of each minute of each round. That's what you got to watch out for. That's what you got to look for. What might be easy, what may feel easy, could really just be the trap. And that is the trap that Brandon Rios brings to the table. It's the trap of you believing that you have the upper hand, when he really is the guy that's bluffing by allowing you to do this so that he can pull you in and he can get his better shots in there. Let's pass it to Fight Fans here on Leaving the Ring, and let's talk some boxing. Let's go. I'm going to call out your area code. Area code 724. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother?
I was just listening in, guys.
Hey, thanks for tuning in, brother. Stay on hold, okay? Let's pass in another Fight Fan here on Leaving the Ring. Area code 510. You're on live right now. What's on your mind, brother? 510, you're on live right now with us, brother. What's on your mind? No? Okay. Let's pass another Fight Fan here. Area code 209, you're on live right now. Leave me what's on your mind, brother. Yeah, what's up, brother? You're on live right now. What's on your mind?
I'm just listening.
All right, man.
All right.
No problem. Right on, brother. I wish we could record that. We need that as a soundbite.
Area code 951. You're on live right now. Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
I'm just listening.
What's going on, fellas?
What's up, man?
What's going on, man?
I got a question about that divorce cloud. You know, I really liked him, but after that Yusef Mack fight, he wasn't really cutting that ring off. So that Cambrillo fight, it showed me the same thing. So you think with the new trainer, they're going to teach him how to cut the ring off a little better?
I think that's a good question. I mean, I think with the work up there that he's getting, with, you know, Golovkin's up there, Ola Afolabi's up there, and Ola's kind of a tweener. He's not, you know, he's not a heavyweight. He's a cruiser, you know, and he's kind of a thinner cruiser at that. I imagine that work is getting done between him and Tavares. That's great work. That's like almost like working with a young James Toney. I mean, Afolabi is a guy that literally is so slick. He once frustrated James Toney to the point of James getting mad, jumping out of the ring, and like throwing a trash can and like freaking out, saying he's going to get his gun.
But here's the question: is it enough time though, so that you can learn some footwork and learn some movement? Off the top of my head, I mean, looking back in history, normally that first time around with a new trainer, it's when you're trying to use exactly what the trainer's been teaching you. But it's hard to put it into a fight. It's easy to do in sparring because they can stop you and tell you, okay, you're not doing this right. You got to try this. You got to do this. But when it comes to fight time, it's kind of hard to, in my opinion, for you to utilize what is being taught newly to you in the ring, in outside the ring.
Yeah, I mean, I'm picking Cloud over Hopkins, but Hopkins' footwork is so great, and his feints and his ability to kind of get you guessing. I'm just wondering if Cloud's just going to not guess and just go at him. If he does that, I mean,
that'd be nice.
Yeah, not cutting off the ring or being kind of deficient and raw in spots, at least if his conditioning's really good, it should make up for that. You know, they should offset each other. But I think it's an interesting fight. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a tough fight, too, because they're going to get in tight and they're going to hit each other. So, you know, we'll see a battle in attrition. So
it could be ugly.
Yeah, because Hopkins going to work them angles. He's going to get dirty with him. You know, I like Hopkins, but I really was in love with Cloud until I started seeing he not cutting that ring off, and that hurt me. I'm like, man, he ain't cutting his ring off, and if somebody from boxing, it might be a problem.
In a way, he almost reminds me a little bit of like a Kirkland in that he really needs a lot of activity. He needs to be fighting often, and so that he remains in good top shape. And so he's a well-oiled machine. And what we saw in those two fights is a guy that fights him frequently, and that's been the thing. He didn't really develop, and on top of that, he's always kind of rusty, and he just never really improved. And so hopefully in this fight, it's another long layoff and everything, but Hopkins isn't exactly – he's almost 50. So hopefully – this new training camp and dedication, we'll see. I don't think Tavares has ever been a lazy guy. I think it's just he's fought so sporadically because for whatever reason, promotional or otherwise, I don't really know what the deal is. So, the kingdom was crumbling, right? the kingdom's been crumbling for a while. It's kind of sad. I mean, they got frozen out, and nobody wanted to deal with Don after a while.
Everything should be pointing for Cloud to take this fight. I mean, he's a younger, he's a bigger guy. But you're right. A lot of these younger guys that get in with Bernard Hopkins, they end up falling into that mirage of what Bernard can do. They end up falling into trying to figure out what Bernard's going to do next. They just got to let that go and understand that Bernard's a master of what he does. But a lot of the ways you stop a master from doing what he does the best is by making him feel old and not respecting him at all. And that's what Cloud's got to do. He just got to be a brute. And
you can't have that fear factor. That's like how Tyson was. When you see him fight Tucker right there, and I knew Tyson could be beat. You know what I'm saying? You got to go in there and you got to just fight him. You can't get that fear factor, and Dawson showed that. You just got to go in and fight him. He's a man like you. But a lot of times you come in there with that fear factor, so you didn't give up about 2-3 rounds.
And here's another thing is that, some fight fans they'll email us here on Leaving the Ring, and they'll go, my only question is we've seen Bernard Hopkins beat guys that come forward that are just two-handed. Kelly Pavlik is the first to come in mind. But here's the thing. Bernard was a lot younger.
Right.
A lot older now. There's a lot of wear and tear, man. And Cloud is a bigger man, in my opinion. He's a more muscular guy. He's more proportioned. And he's a guy that really can lead the light heavyweight division and move up. It's really up to Cloud and what he wants to do. I mean, there's no special effects with Cloud. And that's why we saw happen in the past with Gabriel Capilio is that, he's easy to figure out. But that's what Cloud's got to step it up because – there's a mode, there's a tempo with these guys, a fighter like Cloud. They can pick it up and still be doing the same amount of activity, but with a little bit more activity added to it. And that just makes them a little harder for you to counterpunch because now you're worried about what's coming at you, not sliding in.
And how you feel? You up there with that Guerrero. And I think this fight going to be a little tougher than what people think.
I think so, too.
Guerrero going to make it a little rough. But, I really believe Mayweather probably going to do it. But I think Guerrero going to make it a little rough than what a lot of people giving him credit for.
It's going to be interesting seeing if Hopkins...
You've seen him more, so I believe you should know a little bit more.
But I think, with Hopkins, they say, power is the last thing to go. I think, with him, it's feints, holding, and really good footwork is his last thing to go. And he really knows how to keep you at the right distance, how to kind of intimidate you. I really think a big part of this fight is Cloud just ripping that curtain, that kind of illusion down and just going right at him and pounding away at him.
Right.
And after about 4 or 5 rounds, it won't be pretty, but trying to wear Hopkins down and go for that late stoppage. Really just go at him.
Right.
But, it depends on what Hopkins is able to do. I don't know if Hopkins is going to be able to do everything. I think he'd be able to be elusive, tie him up, be defensive, and keep everything at a slow pace, but I don't think he'd be able to exchange and keep up offense that'll keep Cloud honest, hopefully. I mean, it depends on what kind of Cloud shows up, what kind of condition he's in.
Yeah, I agree with you. And
it's an interesting fight. It's one of the few fights I've wanted this fight for a long time, so I'm actually pretty happy with it.
I'm actually excited about that fight, to tell you the truth. I mean, I think it's a really good matchup. We questioned about the picking that Bernard sometimes would make, and a lot of times he'll pick a fight that he feels that he can win. And obviously, this fight he thinks he can still win because he's relying on what he's been able to bring to the table. And the partner that called in right now, the call was dropped by accident. I mean, I don't know, maybe he was going in, running into a bad reception area. But anyways, Fight Fans, you want to call in, 347-215-7598.
Thanks for the call. That was good.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Saul Canelo pulling out of the fight in April. He's now saying he's going to do it in April. You know, his rant was, fight me instead, Matt Guerrero. And Floyd obviously was not going to comply to that and decided to say, nope, not going to do it. So now the Trout and Canelo fights being moved to April. Oscar De La Hoya did tweet that and stuff. You know, I'm not mad about it. You know, honestly, two really good fights. Both of them I'm both going to watch. I think a lot of fight fans are going to watch it. I know some fight fans were saying, you know, pay-per-view with Floyd versus Guerrero, I was going to buy it. The Canelo now, it's just, they're not really sure. Listen, we know you're going to buy it. Stop lying to yourself.
Stop lying to me.
Yeah, stop lying. Because, you know, when Floyd was going to fight Cotto, you went and still bought it. Okay? And the last call, like you mentioned, Guerrero's going to bring a lot of problems. You got a young, strong guy. And right now, let me say this. Right now, Guerrero's really showing another side of him. Another side that he's never really let the public know about. A side that I knew about. A side that he would show. But he understood in the beginning of building his image. I think we're starting to see what exactly that part of mental toughness that Robert the Ghost Guerrero, which could translate to being a little disrespectful. I know some fight fans felt very disrespectful what he was tweeting and saying, but I think Robert's showing you he has no respect for Floyd because that's the next opponent. Outside of that, if they weren't facing each other, I think that Robert would show tremendous class, which I still think he does. He shows tremendous class. But this kid's he's a fighter 24-7. I mean, there's certain guys out there in the fight world that really believe in the gladiator mode. They don't have in-between times in their lives, you know what I mean, getting, you know, eating bad food, drinking, partying with women. The Robert the Ghost Grill and like Andre Ward, these two guys, they live for this.
You know, I like where Robert's going with all this stuff.
Me too.
You know, it's weird how people don't want him to be a tough guy. They don't want him to be able to say, like, you know, hey, well, they made fun of him with the step up chump, and I thought it was kind of funny actually that he. He was basically, you know, taking Floyd's words and using them, you know. He's demanded things. For whatever reason, people try to deny Robert. Hopefully there's not an echo that everybody else is hearing, because I keep hearing an echo when I talk. I like Robert. I like his approach. I think he shouldn't fight Floyd with any respect whatsoever. I think we've talked over the years in different ways. I think even before I was a host on the show, about how I would beat Floyd, or, you know, at least my approach would be
right
to attack the body, attack that arm, break the shield down, try to get to his body, not even worry about his head for like 5-6 rounds. And that's just all I would do, attack his hands, attack his arms, attack his body. And when he couldn't really do anything more, then you start to really start to work him over. But I mean, that's easier said than done, because like Hopkins, he's still got most of he's got his faculties, and he's got great footwork, and he's an all-time great. So, you know, that would be my approach. Would it work? I have no idea. But I expect Robert to do something kind of similar.
I think, if anything, Robert's got to work with he's got to work with getting caught with the straight right. And that's going to be the bread and butter of Floyd Mayweather. You know, that's his bread and butter of every fight that Floyd steps into. I've always said it, that he's by far one of the best guys that can throw a right hand. And when he catch that rhythm, he can throw it multiple times and catch you with it. That's what Robert's got to be concerned with. He's got to really work on that head movement. He's got to really work on turning Floyd when he decides to get into that shoulder roll. And the only way you can catch it is if you go back and you watch Miguel Cotto. Miguel Cotto was really able to kind of catch Floyd because he would step around it, you know, towards his back, and make Floyd open up a little bit to look to see where Miguel was standing at. And that's when you can land a shot. That's what Robert's got to look at. He's got to look at some of the points of Floyd's career where there's some openings and there is some flaws. And that's what Robert's got to work on. It's a big, long list of tasks that he has to follow through. And we've said it numerous times. You don't go into a fight with Floyd Mayweather with one game plan. You got to have A, B, and C, D, E, and F, and all the other letters down the line in the alphabet when you face Floyd Pretty Boy, whatever you want to call him, Money, Mayweather and stuff, you know. And the interesting point to all this, and we've talked about this before, Guerrero was calling out Floyd, is the families, the two families. You see that Robert's dad now getting involved, Ruben. Ruben is a character, man. His whole family, their whole family were characters. And, you know, it's going to be intriguing. If anything, we're going to get a good show before the lead-up to this fight. We're going to get a great show. I know some folks are saying the only thing is just no 24-7. I don't care where it's going to be at. You're going to be completely entertained by both camps and both families.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know, they are a definite contrast to each other, you know. When you talk about families, I'm talking about more the two corners, you know, which are family affairs, you know. You got the Mayweathers versus the Guerreros. It's going to be like, it's kind of street dudes, you know, kind of eyeing each other. The Guerrero, just make no mistake, like people look at him and go, he's not really that Mexican because he kind of looks like a white guy. Like if he didn't say anything and maybe if he shaved and, you know, they told him that he was, you know, Jimmy Cunningham from Cincinnati. You go, oh, okay. But he's not. You know, he's a hardcore Mexican dude from up north, from Gilroy, from a small town that probably is a little rougher than you would think. The garlic capital of the world. One of my favorite places to drive through. And Guerrero is all about fighting for respect. He wants his respect. He feels that he was a multiple division champion. He wants to be among the best, and he's fought his way to this point. I don't see any reason to really doubt him. He's a southpaw. He's got a tough style. His legs look like they're welterweight legs. He looks strong at the weight. I know it's not all about strength, and Floyd's a strong guy too. It's about skills. But Robert, I think, is a guy that also shows that he can approach a fight intelligently and adapt, particularly in the last few fights. I know he got hit against Berto and he got hit against Aiden, but okay, all fighters get hit. He won those fights. And he dominated Berto in a way nobody expected. So I don't really want to hear it, you know. I think he's got a shot. I think he's got a real good shot. And I like where he's going with it. He's out there vocal with the fans, but he's letting Floyd know, I'm going to beat your ass. I'm not going to show you any respect. Floyd's not going to show him any respect. You know, he didn't show Ortiz any respect. So why would Robert be any different? It's going to be awesome.
I think they're already showing. They started with their version of disrespect to Guerrero by saying they didn't even know who he was. I don't know a whole lot about him.
It's one of his dumb things. I'm not really aware of what was going on with Marquez, but as I understand it, there were some questions. And dude, you read this shit. You know the stories. Come on. Was aware of this guy.
That's his way of shooting at a guy, you know, but basically saying you're nothing, you're beneath me. And I think that, you know, when Guerrero, when we had him on one time and we asked him, he took offense to that. Yeah, even when I talked to them in person, to the family and all that, they really took it to heart. They were like, really? Really? Like, you don't know who we are. That's funny because they do know each other. They've known each other for quite some time. They've known each other for quite some years. So, you know, that to me is what Floyd does. That's the sign of genius that he brings.
It's something that you can't fight against because you'll just kind of stick with it.
Right.
It makes you angrier and angrier. And it's all about making you expend energy. Everything is warfare with Floyd. He knows exactly what he's doing.
Oh, he knows what he's doing. And you know, like I said, it's a very sonic genius sometimes at what he does. And Guerrero, I like the fact that he's the one that started doing the trash talking. He's the one that showed. When we talk about Tavares Cloud right now, he's got to go in there, you know, not worrying about how masterful Bernard Hopkins can be, but to concentrate on what he can do, of being more youthful, being more muscular, being the bigger guy, going in and trying to do what you have to do. That's the same thing with Robert. You know, and I know some people are going to say, Robert's not the bigger guy. Yes, he is. He is a big guy. Trust me. He's not that tiny. He's a muscular kid. And here's another point.
And he's an angry dude, too. Like, he's not that friendly when he was heading into the press conference. I mean, he wasn't rude, but he's that guy on a mission. That's the sense I get from him when I talk to him. He's just out to convince me and everybody else what he believes. That's a dangerous person.
He, in the mean streak that came out of him is when he had when he was going to face Andre Berto. You remember that interview? And the fight fans, if you don't remember that, go back and listen to that interview. You started to hear the mean streak because of the fact that he was being very undermined by not just by the media but by fans when he was calling out Floyd Mayweather, and you started to hear a little bit of that meanness come out of him. I've spoken to him personally, and when he talks about other fighters, you know, Robert gets excited. He gets really excited, man. He's like a little kid in a candy store. He's like, oh, dude, I'd love to fight that guy. I knock him out. And going back and meeting him for the first time, and I filmed it a long time ago. I think it was back in 2006, 2007. We're running up. He's running up in the – I'm on we're running up. Yeah, right. He was running up in the hills of Gilroy, California. And this guy was running 17 to 18 miles, and he did it. He was doing it every day. And he continues to do stuff like that. And the reason I bring this up is because when Oscar De La Hoya faced Manny Pacquiao, the crew and the producer of 24/7, he told me something. He said, the guys that win these 24/7 fight, I mean, the guys that win these super fights that we filmed on 24/7 series have always been the guys that do a lot of road work. And Floyd is facing a guy that does a lot of road work as well and is equally as dedicated to the sport as himself. That's what makes this fight a little bit more interesting and dangerous.
I think so. Robert's it's a dangerous guy. It's just there's something about him. He really believes that he's a man of destiny, and he's been through, you know, Floyd's been through some things. He's been through a tough life. His stuff
Absolutely.
With his father, you know, all that's tough, and there's no denying that. But Robert's really fought. He's not a blue-chip prospect. He wasn't coddled his whole life. There wasn't guys fighting over him to try to be his manager before he was ever a pro. He wasn't sponsored like that. You know, he fought his way into this position. And a guy like that that really has had to fight, that's a dangerous man. And that's who Robert is. And I think that anybody, you know, I could see the odds and everything. Look at, you know, all the deal that's laid out there. Floyd's CBS deal, how much money's involved, how much is at stake. I don't know if that goes away if Floyd loses. I think he's just contracted to do those fights. But a big part of the Mayweather brand is being undefeated. The creme de la creme, the best. That goes away if Robert wins. So he's already got – he's probably down – eight rounds on the cards already, at least on one card. Robert's got a lot of work to do in this fight, but I think with everything against him, it reminds me of, I don't know if you ever watched Get Smart, but they would say that the lead guy, you know, Maxwell Smart, you know, you're heading into, you know, absolute sudden, you know, certain death. You're surrounded by 500, you know, Russian agents, and you only have a gun with one bullet to defend yourself, and everything is stacked against you, and there's no way you could possibly win. And Maxwell Smart just says, and loving it. And I think that's where Robert Guerrero is right now. The more you stack it against him, the more you tell him he's not going to do it, the more he's going to just smile, work harder, and work on his game plan and bring it on May 4th. I'm really, the more I think about it, the more I get excited about this fight. I'm not outright picking Guerrero. I'm not picking Floyd just now. I kind of think that it's going to be a Floyd decision, just because that's politics.
I'm letting it simmer in, man. That's all I'm doing right now.
Yeah, it's going to be a good-ass fight. I can't wait.
Absolutely. Let's pass in some fight fans here on Legal Ring, 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here. We're talking Guerrero and Mayweather here on Leaving the Ring. If you haven't downloaded the app on Google Store, it's going to be very soon on the iPhone as well. You can still download it on your iPhone. You're just that not going to have all the features that the Google Store is doing. And we're working on a lot of other things too as well. New radio shows here on the mobile app. You're only going to be able to get it on the mobile app. But let's patch in some fight fans here on Leaving the Ring. Let's go with the area code 787. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Yo,
it's Rob, time what's to up, go man? In.
Oh, it's time to go in. Going in raw. Floyd Mayweather. Let's get this straight right now. His daddy got that butt beat, right, by Ray Leonard, and his uncle got that butt beat by Chavez, and we've seen how both Ray Leonard and Chavez did it. It's about positioning, and it's about body-head, right? Not head-body like everybody want to go. You know, Cotto tried to do it for too many rounds, head-body, head-body. You know, Floyd Mayweather, you got to take what he gives you. He gives you body. You know, and if you focus too much on the head, you're basically going to be gassed out by round five, and that's when he's going to start throwing one punch around. You know, copy box stats going to come out with some glitch, talk about he's throwing 500 punches in a round. Get out of here. All right, Floyd Mayweather never throw 500 punches in his life in a fight. All right. It's a conspiracy. Am I the only one that notices that? They're like, Floyd Mayweather threw 100 punches last time. You're like, well, like,
when? Yeah, when? Yeah. which fight? Was that an average?
Do those elbows count? Like,
they
rounded
off. What? You know that, right? They rounded up or they rounded off. You know, like, oh, he threw 34. Let's take the 100.
Yeah, they're counting them elbows in there. Like, oh, well, he rolled the punch. That counts as a jab. Oh, no. But it's like, I mean, if you look back at his fight with Chavez, I think back at lightweight, junior lightweight, that was a really, really tough fight for Floyd. Castillo, another really tough fight for Floyd. The second go around, you know, maybe he wasn't injured, maybe not, but the Cotto fight, you know, these are all guys that had something in common going into the first fight. They weren't focused about how to beat Floyd so much as what they had to do to beat the style. All right, because really, if you look at it, it's his style. It's not him. If it was up to him, listen, if it was up to Floyd, this is where it's not really about him. The referees and the rules today in boxing, since they're not being followed, you're not really fighting him. You're fighting that style that's just being allowed to do whatever, you know, what is best, what some guys nourish it from. You know, they take that style and they bend the rules a little bit and they take advantage of it. But if it was the old days, you know, back in the day, if a fight broke out and dudes were doing dirty stuff, you know, they were doing dirty stuff. Like, let's say, can you really say Chavez Sr. would not have beaten Floyd? He probably would have beat a mud hole in him in a 15-round fight. But, you know, it's because you're not going to get away with that. If you hit Chavez with an elbow, he's going to hit you in the kidneys. You know, believe me, an elbow to the face of Chavez, that big hard head is not going to...
We were talking in the gym the other day. It was like me sitting around a bunch of like kind of old timers outside during the media day for Bradley, and we were talking about the Ray Leonard and Mayweather fight, Senior. And it was interesting watching Leonard figure the style out, and when you know with the Mayweather style, sometimes he'd give you his back, and he said like, you know, the old time guys try to shoot over that shoulder for whatever reason to the temple, think they can get him the top of his head. Like Ray Leonard or any old school guy would hook around your back and pop you in the middle of your spine or the base of your spine and let you know, don't give me your spine ever again or I'm going to paralyze your ass and beat you. New school guys don't do that. There's a lot of gray area that's missing from boxing anymore. All that old school stuff that Hopkins does, either guys do all of that and it's a really ugly fight, or they don't do any of it and there's no gray area. It looks like two guys trying to work the pads against each other all fight long. We're losing a lot of subtlety and a lot of the art of this game, a lot of the little tricks of moving in close to a guy in your guard and shooting up your rear elbow into their sternum, you know, to kind of knock the wind out of them or kind of move them into position so you can pop them with the other hand. Little things like that. You don't see it as much, you know. Maybe I'm wrong, but...
I think a lot of fighters that face him end up getting so memorized of what he's doing, and they want to try to fight a perfect fight with him. And a lot of times, you just can't do that, you know. And you're absolutely right, Rob, about the forearm and things that he's getting away with, things that he does and he applies. And I know some fans get mad. I have, you know, friends and family members that get just completely pissed off on what he does. But I always go back and say, hey, if you can get away with it, you can
do it. Yeah.
Guerrero could go into this fight with a mentality. I want him to go into the fight how Barrera went into the Nassim Hamed fight. He wasn't having none of that shit.
Yeah.
he was
all about
all over the place.
Yeah.
Turnbuckle is still one of my favorite scenes to watch, man, is when Barrera just rammed his hand into that buckle there. And I mean, how many times the whole house erupted when I watched it, when it was on pay-per-view. The whole house erupted. I think all the neighbors, even if you weren't a fight fan, you wanted to see something like that. And, you know, the medicine paid back to Hamed. I think a lot of fight fans want to see that medicine paid back to Floyd Mayweather, you know?
I love when they show the replay of Barrera from the point of view of, like, you know, Hamed coming at the camera, it looks like Super Grover when he's about to crash. You know?
I like Barrera's face expression when he, you know, he looks at the ref. He's like, "What? Me? No, I don't do nothing. I didn't do nothing."
Still, like, don't be rough with me. I won't be slamming your face into the turnbuckle. You know.
Yeah, Rob, I'm gonna put you back in the hole, brother. Thanks for calling in, man.
Great call, man. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Anytime.
Let's pass in some more Fight Fans here on Leaving the Ring. Let's go with area code 860. And we're going to be calling our next guest in about 30 more minutes. 860, you're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother?
Is it me again?
Oh, that's my bad.
I'm trying to get you on. I want to interview you.
I'll put down again. I don't have anybody here to write down for us who we've had on. But let's go with... I'm going to pass in another Fight Fan here on Leaving the Ring. I got a new mic, man, so tell me if you guys like the new mic. I did put it up on the Instagram. And but here, let's go with area code 267. Area code 267, you're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? No. Okay. Fight Fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598, you certainly can. Speak to myself, Dave Duenas, or my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. Either way, you can call in, and let's talk some boxing here on Leaving in the Ring. Let's talk about this past weekend fights, man. I definitely want to talk about Lamont Peterson, Issa Sugar Smith, or Alejandro Perez. Whatever pick you want to talk about first, Gabriel, go for it.
Let's talk about Alakran, man. I just think he... He really just, for me, it was just an exciting fight. You know, it was not what I expected. I thought, I thought that he would be outworked later in the fight, that Hovhannisyan would figure him out, kind of start outboxing him and moving him backwards. Instead, it was the other way around. And like somewhere in the middle of the fight, like fifth round, I think, Perez really started to get down and dirty to the body. And all that work he'd done early on started to pay off, and it was just great to see a guy that just he wanted it more. He just worked at it harder. He's not a special effects guy. He's a no frills, just blue collar worker who likes to pound the body and until the head starts to go. It was a nice win, man. It was really nice to see justice done and him get the. Dave's just stepped away from the mic.
No, I'm right here.
Yes.
Okay. You know what? I had a chance to talk to Alejandro. I believe I spoke to him. I spoke to him, actually. I talked to him on Wednesday. I gave him a call, and he was leaving Mexico, and he said he's going to be coming on Leaving the Ring as soon as he gets back. And I've known Alejandro, man, for 7 to 8 years. I did a YouTube video with him a long time ago. If you followed, you know, my work, you would have saw that I've had him. It was Mexico's kept secret at 122. And this one, he's at 122 at time. He was undefeated, and he was at the wild card. And he was really known for that body shot. He had hurt Juanma Lopez when he was undefeated at the time. He had hurt other guys, you know, that had traveled through the wild card. Everybody kind of knew a little bit about him, you know. And the thing about Alejandro and the sweetness of this victory and the sweetness of him finally getting his due is that this guy's always came up short. And what I mean by this is that at the time in 2006 he was undefeated, didn't have a promoter. He had a manager trainer, but the manager trainer really, you know, was trying to do his best to get him fights and trying to get him exposure. Well, the time that when he needed to get exposure is when Al Haymon walked into the gym in Wild Card to kind of find out what was all the huff and puff about this kid. And Alejandro wasn't able to perform. And Al Haymon turned around to the people that had called him in to see Alejandro and said, like, you know, there's nothing special about this kid. So he kind of lost his money ticket. He lost his way of really getting that exposure and getting his himself out there. And it could have been a little too early, too soon. So, you know, it might have been it was a blessing in disguise, because at 22 years old, he still needed some growth. He still needed to grow and find himself, you know. But there's no mercy in boxing. You know, there is no in-between in boxing. Either you're poor or you're rich. And I remember interviewing him and asking him, is there a plan B if you never become a world champion? And I'll never forget when Alejandro looked at me and he said, I was sent here from my parents from Mexico to become a champion. I have no other desire or no other option but to become a champion. So to see this kid go through everything he has gone through, to go through what he had to get in order to be where he's at now, I got to applaud that, man. It was one of the greatest things to hear and to witness from Alejandro is that when he was able to get himself finally in that position. Because every time we thought that he was going to get it, every time we thought that this is his opportunity, he fell short of it. But it was those one fights that we said, nope, it's not going to happen. He's probably going to not perform. He's probably going to choke. Guess what? He ended up coming on top. So congratulations to Alejandro Alacran Perez. Brother, you've worked really hard. And when people talk about hard work and dedication, this kid is a prime example. This kid is a prime example, just like Issa Say Smith. They didn't give up. They continued. They continued. Even with this dark road of boxing, they searched for that one little pinhole of light. And they found it. And not only did they found it, they ripped through it so they can get the full sunshine. And they got the full sunshine this past weekend of our sport.
Yeah. Without question, dude. Alejandro, hard work and dedication. That's who that guy is. Every time we go to the wild card, like 10 o'clock, boom, there he is, you know, wearing his John Stockton shorts and a big smile. And he's there with his trainer, always on time, always working hard. You can always tell he's done his road work. I mean, the guy's got, like, strong legs. He's just a workhorse in the gym. I always kind of worry that he's going to, in these long periods, spar too much and not get enough rest, you know. This fight, it seemed like he was just right. He was just all ready to go. He had a lot of energy, definitely a clear plan of attack, and he just let it go. And that's him. I think either the style is going to favor him to do that. That's him pushing the envelope, I think, as far as he can go in some ways. Either that's going to work for him or it's not going to work for him.
You know, you're right. And Linus from Twitter is asking, where does he go from there? Does a promoter pick him up? I hope so. If there's one promoter a management team that comes to mind right now that has a history of picking up the underdog, the guy that really some people want to just throw aside, and the management team that knows how to develop guys like Alejandro, I hope Espinoza Boxing witnessed that and scratched their head a little bit and go, here's a kid that won't give up, that comes to fight, and he's exciting. In a lot of ways, you know, I mean, there's some similarities there, not a whole lot, but Alejandro Perez is a bit of a Israel Vasquez, a guy that was losing and a guy that needed somebody to believe in him. Alejandro needs somebody, a management team, to believe in him.
Yeah, that's true. I think he really does need structure, and it is important. Management's important, you know, not everybody... not everybody really gets that. They don't really get that kind of guidance. They don't get, look where Ishii's gone since Al Haymon came into his career. And now he's a champion. I think that's significant to his management. And I think with Alacron, I think he needs to get down to 126. I think he can be much more effective there. I don't know if he would agree with that, but that's really where he belongs, you know. He's not really a 130. It was nice that he was able to pick up that kind of belt. I don't know what he wants to do with it because it does move him into – it's unexpected. You know, he's normally a 20 – he's fought in his last fight as a 26, taking out Derek Wilson, which is a very impressive performance, you know. Wilson's no joke. And now with taking out a guy that's undefeated in Art, he's got this belt, but he's in a division that maybe he's not particularly suited for, even though he's got a W there. I mean, I don't know. You know, it's going to be interesting. I think they should probably move to 26 where he can still enjoy a physical advantage. And Jack, you're right. You make a move towards good management. And the Espinozas would be great. I don't know. You know, there's a few places I think I would go.
You know, the thing is that staying at 130,
Thompson Boxing would be nice, you know?
Yeah, you know, and that's why you would need a good management team, because at 130, he'd probably end up staying there because the offers would kind of roll in, you know? And if he got a rematch with Art, you know, Alejandro would still be coming in as an opponent. It would still be negotiated as an opponent. That's why he needs a management team to say, hey, you got the bout 130, but let's look down the line. Let's look down to that, back to that lower weight you were at, and let's bank on that. A lot of possibilities, but then there's a lot of no opportunities. And that's the way it goes sometimes in boxing. Ask a lot of these guys that have came overseas and fought here in the States and upset at the poster boy or the guy that was supposed to be the next great thing. They win, and you don't see them back on that network. It happens a lot.
Yeah, I think it's let's move into the Ishii Smith fight, Cornelius Bundridge. You know, it was interesting. I was watching the fight, but I was also kind of rudimentary checking in on Twitter, and not really participating that much. I kind of tend to these days put my at replies on, just kind of look at my at replies, who's interacting with me, and just kind of putting my thing on and not looking. But then I kind of looked out, and everybody was so negative about the Ishii Smith Cornelius Bundridge fight. It was like a bunch of kids trying to one up each other on who had the best one liner about how bad this fight was, or more like listening to Dan Raphael or reading his Twitter timeline when he's reading the WBC rankings. You know, it's like it was just overkill. Like, we get it. It's a tough matchup. It's going to be sloppy. It may not be the most aesthetically pleasing thing, but I felt that the fight had a lot of drama. Early on, for me, part of the drama was Ishii going to come out of his shell? Was he going to reach for greatness? I thought that was a big storyline in the fight. Would he do that? And I thought he did later on in the fight. At least for him, he found that kind of middle ground, you know, where he could really kind of push, but not out of his envelope of being a boxer. But he could keep the pressure on and outwork in times, really just kind of will himself to have more offense than Bundridge, who he started to fall all apart. I think Bundridge is doing good early, but he's such a tense fighter. And his physique, there's something about him that just kills his stamina. And halfway through, I thought he was just by the fifth already, kind of dancing and moving, buying time in ways that he shouldn't have been. But I didn't think it was an awful fight. I didn't want to stab my eyes out by any means. I was actually kind of interested. Yeah, I was entertained watching Ishii go for his first belt. We were watching history, and the hashtag bullies or the negative Nellies of the internet. It's just like this mob mentality of, oh, this is awful. We can't like anything because we're super cool, and I wish fights were the way they were. You know, somebody wrote Jay Kang, actually, I think it was from Grantland. He was talking about Broner. He wrote a piece about him recently on Grantland ESPN, and he talked about how boxing has a nostalgia problem. Nothing ever measures up. And it wouldn't matter if we had a good heavyweight. It would never be as good as Tyson. It would never be as good as Frazier or the best things that we remember. Well, geez, you know, if you raise the bar that high, how can you enjoy anything? I thought the fight was fun. It was cool. I really liked his post-fight interview. Just like Areola, I have no problem with a fighter showing me genuine emotion, even if that includes crying. Because I'm secure in myself as a man.
I didn't have no problem with him crying. I had no problem with the fight. I thought it was entertaining. You know, our standards sometimes can be a little too high. And, you know, the bottom line, it was a good fight. Was it a great fight? Absolutely not. Even the criticism of, it was canine, dude. Come on. You're absolutely right. It was canine. Now it's all about, can Ishii Smith hold on to the title? Because at 154, there's a lot of guys out there, a lot of fighters out there that can give him a lot of fits. You know, Carlos Molina, the king, is one of them. And if that fight materializes, which I hope it does, because, you know, Smith is definitely trying to play the forward type of deal, you know, for Molina, knowing that Molina's been in tough situations himself and is willing to mix it up with them.
This guy, sorry, There was a guy that said it perfectly. Has Bundridge not been in an ugly fight? This guy, SweetScience559 on Twitter.
Absolutely,
getting in a Bundridge fight, and Ishii has actually been in some good fights. The Guerrero fight, I thought. The Jacobs fight was good. I thought he won the Guerrero fight. Like, but complaining about a Bundridge fight being kind of ugly, it's like going to Denny's and complaining about the food.
Exactly. You know, but you know, this is the thing. Yeah, he fights ugly, but you know, Smith was going for it. It wasn't like he was just relying on what K-9 was doing. He was, you know, mixing it up. He was exposing him a little bit more. He was making him. Here's the thing too, is that some, you know, the commentator said that Edwards was kind of making an excuse, saying that when Bundridge, he fights at a minimum and he fights ugly because he's 39. I'm sorry, but he fought the exact same way when he fought on the contender. This guy has not changed one bit.
He's always fought that way. Yeah. He's kind of an awkward dude, and he's not – what Ishii did, I mean, I think in some sense it's a boxing match is about, is displaying your skills clearly for the audience to see, for the judges to see. That's why there's judges. You know, it's a competition displaying who has the better skills. Ishii, time and again, displayed that he was the better boxer by far. You know, he had straighter punches. He knew how to cut the ring off. He was setting the pace. It was all ring generalship. He was in control. Like, I think after four or five rounds, it took a while, but about four or five rounds.
You know, because for a while, those 3 rounds, I was thinking, wow, my prediction is going to come right. You know, that not being consistent, it's there. But he settled down. He started to relax. And he started to look for the opportunities and to execute. And that was one thing that I saw from him. And I think that's what made it a bit more exciting. Now, with K-9, here's the thing. An awkward guy like that, and you watch all of his other fights. All his other fights. Not everybody has been able to hit this guy cleanly because of the fact he's so awkward. He doesn't really – the way he throws his punches, he's not there for you to be hit. And what I mean is that it's not like he slips it. But this guy has no balance whatsoever. So when he throws a punch and you're about to counter, he falls on top of you. It messes up your momentum, you know? And – I wouldn't blame anybody that fought him that would get frustrated with him because the ugliness that he brings, you know, and I don't think K-9 is just, you know, he wants to be ugly, but his footwork is what makes his style so ugly. The guy has no feet.
That's the thing. He's got bad feet. He's got funky offense. But, you know, everybody's physicality is everybody's physicality makes up their style. That's what style comes from, really, in boxing. What you physically can do, what you learned, when did you learn it, who did you learn it from, and probably most importantly, who did you learn it from first? And so K-9 fights funky, and he always will fight funky. And that's just the way it is. And I think Ishii, a classic style like Ishii's that really values technique and good footwork and proper balance and distance and all those things is going to tame a style like that. Like you brought up Barrera versus Hamed. This is kind of the same thing. When you fight an awkward guy, you get fundamental. And I think Ishii learned that. And I think there was also just that taking it across the finish line, fighting with passion, trying to put a period on the end of each round.
And
on the fight itself. I mean, it was just watching Ishii not like grow up before our eyes, but in a sense just mature fully as a fighter and fully into a champion. Or a title holder, really. You know, he's a champion. He's entered into the pantheon of champions. I'll give him that. He's not undisputed yet, but you know, it's just the beginning for him. I was very humbled by his post fight speech because it reminded me of when the Lakers with Shaq and Kobe first won their championship, and it was a post fight interview with Rick Fox, and you could just see how dazed he was, how out of he was, and the veterans were telling him, like, he doesn't know how it tastes yet, but, you know, we're going to show him. And that's kind of what, you know, Ishii was let in on, this kind of great mystery. All the other guys that had gotten world champions that he knows, he trains among, you know, Floyd Mayweather at that gym, they all knew a secret, and he finally got to be let in on that secret. And it was a beautiful thing to see, because he was just awash in it, you know? He was just overwhelmed by it. It was awesome. That's what we watch. That's why we watch.
Absolutely. It just shows you how human a fighter can be. You know, they're just like us, you know. And, you know, and I'm reading it on Twitters right now that bouts sometimes don't mean nothing. And one of the response was that, well, he does mean something because that's their lead into money. You're absolutely right. You know, when speaking to Easton Smith, when I was down in Las Vegas and we sat down, we had a long conversation. And I'll put up that video that I did with him and stuff. And one of them was that, you know, this guy struggled with finance. You know, I mean, how do you expect, you know, a man to pay, you know, to support his family if he's not able to make the money of what he's, you know, of what he does as a career? You know, you can't provide if you're not fighting. You can't provide if there's no work. So there was a little bit of everything, I believe, in that emotion. A little bit of everything with him winning this belt. Because now we can see that there's going to be that light tunnel. There's going to be that money behind their stuff. We're going to be calling Hugo the Boss Centeno on here on Leaving the Ring right now in about 1 minute. I'm going to look up his number because I got to call him in. And Fight Fans, you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We're going to be talking about Lamont Peterson in a short bit as well. And we're going to be talking about the upcoming fights this weekend on our fight schedule. And we have a couple other guests that are going to be joining us, BJ Flores and Keandre Leather. It's Leatherhead, right, Gabriel? Yeah, it is Leatherhead.
Leatherwood.
Leatherwood. Leatherwood, you know.
An iron jaw. Yeah, no, leather jaw. It's funny. Leatherhead. I got to tell him.
What's the difference? Anyways, so let's call in Hugo here with us here on Leaving the Ring. We've had him on a few times, and we've even when we did our first live stream at a gym, he was one of our guests, and he was a really good interview, man. Saw him fighting in San Jose, California. Big kid, and he's got a really good challenge fight here with Keandre Leatherwood. Kind of surprising that match was made, bro. I don't know what your thoughts were, but that was kind of surprising. What do you think?
I think it was a calculated risk. You know, I was looking at Joel De La Hoya's, who handles Hugo, looking at his Twitter, and he was saying, like, all these different guys passed. And you know, Mario Iagobi, they're taking some chances. They were going to take a chance with Julio Diaz heading over to Canada, or Joel Diaz, rather, heading over to Canada. To take on a dude that didn't look that good that night, you know, instead, he ends up. Are we calling him in?
We're calling him.
But then with this fight too, you know, with versus Hugo, Leatherwood's a live dog. This is a tough fight. Both these guys are going to go at it. Leatherwood's stopped before, and it's going to be interesting to see what Hugo can do with him. I think Hugo's really coming into his own as a fighter. Wasn't this Arnett first? Okay.
Hello, can I please speak to Hugo?
Yeah, you got it.
What's up, brother? This is Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya here on Leaving the Ring.
How's it going, man?
Doing good, man. How you been, bro?
I've been great.
Man, you got a really exciting fight. As soon as I heard it, I tweeted out there, and your manager, Joel De La Hoya, retweeted it. I was like, this is a great fight, a really great fight with Keandre. Let me ask you, because my partner was discussing why this fight kind of happened here. Name off a few of the names of the guys that didn't want to mix it up with you that end up leading into this dangerous fight for yourself and for Keandre.
I was supposed to fight Daquan Arnett, 10-0 with 6 knockouts, I believe. He's without Heyman. And from what I heard, he called me out. And I, you know, as soon as they let me know, I said, let's take the fight. I've been training hard already, sparring with Kid Talkett, helping him get ready for his world title fight. So I was already getting the ball rolling. So after I signed the contract, they declined it. And then, you know, they offered a few other guys the fight, and they declined it. And Keandre stepped up to the plate and said, I'll take the fight, you know?
Do you know anything about Keandre? I know there's probably some video out there about him, but just kind of quick Googling it, it seems like there are some fights of his. Have you had a chance to study him and prepare for him?
Definitely. You know, he has a couple fights out there. Nothing, not too much. The most fight we get information on was with, I believe it's John Jackson. And, you know, he's a strong fighter. He comes out, leaves it all in the ring. He's had a lot of experience. So he knows what he's doing up there. You know, he's not some bum or a journeyman. he's coming to win, and I know he's coming to take my undefeated, but I'm ready.
You've really kind of come into your own, I think, in this last year or so. Talk about the changes that you feel in your game, or the improvements, rather.
Actually, I feel like I've developed a lot mentally. I feel like before I used to cut myself a little short. You know, I'm more capable of doing that than what I give myself credit for. And working with, you know, Kid Chocolate, Michael Medina, Ishida, Lucky Boy, guys like that who are already at a world-class level, just gave me the confidence and took me to that next level of boxing. So I feel like I've matured a lot mentally.
Too, I think physically, you know, because you're kind of a beanpole. You're a tall guy for your weight class.
Yeah, I'm a tall man.
And at first, you kind of look at you. The first few times I saw you, like Fight Night Club around there, it seemed like you physically, it was like, this guy might not be that strong physically. I wonder how that's going to play out. But you really seem to have filled out in your last few fights. Can you talk about just the physical maturation? Because you're a young guy. You're only, what, 22 years old?
Yeah, I just turned 22, and I also feel the difference. You know, I feel like I'm starting to become more solid. I'm growing into my body, and I'm maturing a lot and developing more.
You fight a lot, too. I mean, 6 fights last year, and a really solid record. It seemed like you got better as you went along. Do you guys feel, I mean, you took a little bit of time. Did you need a little bit of rest from December all the way to March? Did you feel like you needed to heal and kind of recharge?
No, not necessarily. I'm the type of fighter that likes to stay busy, and you know, I like to stay active. It just happened to work out this way. The manager, Joel De La Hoya, said it's time to step it up to 10 rounds, and he said we'll take a little bit more time in preparing ourselves to make sure we do 10 solid rounds no matter what the situation is in the ring. You know, we have to brawl or box, whatever the situation, we're prepared for 10 rounds. So the training camp was a little longer, but that's what happened.
What do you prefer? What makes you tick? Like, do you like to box a little more, or do you want to mix it up? Do you want to get it? When I saw you in San Jose, I mean, you know, tall, big, and I saw a little bit of that. You like to mix it up. You like to come forward, and you like to do your thing.
Definitely, you know, I love to mix it up. You know, I believe boxing would be a smarter and easier way out sometimes to just make that easy win, but it's just sometimes in my blood where just I like to exchange and, you know, get in my 3 or 4 punches and get back to boxing, you know.
Do you guys have like a specific goal in mind for the year? I know you always kind of don't want to look ahead and stay fight by fight, but do you guys say, okay, if you win this one, we're going to step to this and then to this? Is there an outline?
There's possibilities of fighting other fighters. Like you said, I'm always focused on the fighter in front of me, the task at hand. You know, there's talks of maybe fighting Robert Navanasa Garcia after this fight, if everything goes well and according to plan. But, you know, it's just talk so far. But my goal for this year is to fight at least 4 times since we're moving up into the bigger rounds.
Moving up in those bigger rounds, you know, and you're saying that, you know, you like to mix it up. Is that something you think you have to try to reframe with in training camp so that you can, you know, you don't end up wasting too much energy or outworking yourself where you leave yourself in a bad position since it's going 10 rounds and not, you know, a normal 4 to 6 round fight?
No, not necessarily. You know, I prepared myself well and I feel like I could do 10 hard rounds because that's what I've been preparing my body for these last couple of months. And I feel like if I have to go to war every round, I'll be ready.
What is the one punch that you think will go that identifies you when you get in the ring? What is the one punch that you are most comfortable with? And what is the punch that you think that you've had to work on?
I think the punch that identifies me is my jab. It's the key to everything. You know, it makes openings. If there's no openings, it'll create an opening. And as far as working on other punches, I would just say mixing up my combinations, not just one punch in particular, but just putting them all together.
Hearing your manager, Joel, tell you we need to step it up. We got to move to that next level, to 10 rounds. is that refreshing for yourself to hear your manager is having some trust in you, belief in you? So it adds a little pressure to you, you think, maybe to make sure that there is no letdown there. There is no, you know, questioning of the right choice being made.
No, not necessarily. I really don't feel the pressure. I feel more confident because I see that he sees something that I might not see, and he believes in me that I could go those 10 rounds, and, you know, I've taken it to that next level, and he sees that, and he wants to show the rest of the world.
What did you learn in the Allen Conyers fight? That's probably the most, you know, most veteran guy, and he's been in there with a lot of big names. Was that a significant fight for you, or do you think, is there another one that stands out to you that was more of a rite of passage than that one?
No, definitely. That was a very significant fight because he's, like you said, he's a veteran fighter. He's been up against some tough opposition. And, you know, after I hurt him in the first round, I put him down pretty bad. He got up hurt and just kind of survived. And then he still came back and he was still going pedal to the metal every single round. And, you know, he caught me a few times, nothing to where I felt buckled or he was going to put me down, but just to never underestimate my fighter, regardless if they're hurt or not.
Yeah, I mean, he put down James Kirkland. That's a quality, that's a guy that can, you know, punch a little bit, you know, he's a quality guy. I mean, I didn't say that James Kirkland is a haggler or anything, but he's the first guy, I think, to put Kirkland down. And yeah, you handled him, you put him down in the first, and you got him out of there. I'm excited for your year, man. I think it's going to be, I think it's good. You know, it's, I got to be honest with you. I wasn't sure, you know, what early on, what I was,
yeah,
you know, about what I was seeing. But the more I see you, if there's like most improved fighter awards, I would think you would definitely be one of the candidates from last year. I think all the activity did you so good, dude.
Right.
Would you agree with that?
I feel like this past year has just helped me find myself a little more in what my craft is. You know, the first couple fights, it was just a lot of fighters to help build my record, kind of per se, but and it didn't really teach me as much because, you know, knockout after knockout. And then when I started putting in those rounds and starting to learn little things, little tricks in the ring, I started to learn my craft a little more of what I'm capable of doing, and I feel like it's taking me to that next level.
Is the game is slower now a little bit? Like, you can kind of relax within a round and go, okay, within these three rounds, maybe you can even break up the 3 minutes into things that you want to do. How do you? What's the difference in the set of time?
Definitely, you know, in four round fights, you just have to go out there and, you know, you only have four rounds, so you have to step it up, and everything you've trained for, you've got to let it out in those 12 minutes that you have. And now that you're going 10 rounds, I mean, that's 30 minutes of pure boxing. So you get to break it up, have a game plan, and really take it to chess, you know, like a chess match.
You know, every time I talk to an amateur fighter that decides to go pro, one thing they always say is that, because I'll ask them, like, what do you like about turning pro? And they all say, the rounds. You get to relax a little bit more, you get to do a little bit more, and you get to work at a different pace. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. You know, like I was saying right now, you have more time to break up a game plan instead of just going out there and trying to create one and trying to, I mean, obviously you have to adapt to the fighter, but it just gives you more time to break them down.
Well, Hugo, I'm really excited about this fight. I got to tell you, this is I like when I see fighters and prospects or whatever that decide to take risk. And kudos to yourself and your manager to take this fight, to give a fight, a real fight for the fight fans out there that are going to tune in and watch you and Keandre mix it up.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, guys, for having me on, and I'm excited as well, and hopefully we could do another interview after the fight.
Absolutely,
yeah,
brother. As always.
As always, yeah.
Sounds good.
All
cool,
right,
man.
Take care.
All righty. Bye-bye.
That's funny. Linus tweeted out, Conyers held his own with Kirkland and Carlos Molina. And, you know, he did. He got stopped by both guys. But, I mean, the Kirkland fight, he held his own for like a round. You know, that's, I mean, you put him down, he'll always have that. But, boy, what a round. That was I remember that fight. It was kind of everybody's introduction to Kirkland. I'd been following him for a while and kept saying, like, dude, you got to see this guy. And that was the fight. It took him getting knocked down on Showtime, which is funny because that's where I saw Tito get knocked down so many times and get up and stop people.
Right.
That was the fight that did it. Haven't got James Kirkland yet. I got to be perfectly honest with Dave, with you, Dave, and our listeners, that I'm not quite ready to do the interview, and I think other people have rushed to do the interview, or they didn't read my piece about it, the beginning of the end of James Kirkland. It was a question on Max Boxing. None of that's changed. You know, I was talking to people this week, and I'm told that, you know, Mike Miller's not – I haven't talked to him directly, but I've talked to people that know him, know his position. It's not retractable at this point. You want to buy the contract, cool, but it's going to cost, and but there's no breach. James is kind of almost in breach at this point, is what it's seeming like. He's not fighting. He's not – there's a disconnect. And Golden Boy apparently is not willing to sell it at all. They're not willing to get out of the contract. They went through a lot, and they believed in James Kirkland, and they gave him a lot of opportunities. I mean, as critical as I am of Golden Boy, I'm backing them on this one. They were good to James. When he lost, all bets were off, and I don't think anybody's explained that to him, that his minimum changed once he lost. And now he's just got to fight to get back in line like everybody else, and that's, I think, what's upsetting him. But he needs to fight. You know, we're going to call in Anatoly. Did you get my text?
I did. I'm going to call him in right now. And,
okay. Our next guest, and I'll kind of handle this one because I kind of sprung this on Dave.
You just sent out that YouTube video, you know, of the fight, so that fight fans could kind of have an understanding of why we're having him on today.
Yes, I will do that right now.
While you're doing that, I'm going to be calling him in, and we'll keep it rolling here on Leaving the Ring.
I'm going to be tweeting out a link for you of this next opponent, or this next guest. His name is Anatoly Dudchenko. He's out of the Ukraine. He trains out of the Fortune Gym. And he took out Sabu Balagu for the NABA light heavyweight title. And that's, again, what we're talking about. Belts matter. Belts really matter to these guys. Hey, Anatoly, this is Gabriel Montoya with Leave It in the Ring and Max Boxing with my co-host, Dave Duenas. How are you?
Sorry.
Welcome to the show. Let me jump right into it. And we had talked about in the gym basically how we were going to approach the format. So I'm going to just start at the beginning. How did you get into boxing? And where was your very beginnings in the sport?
I played volleyball 15 years. So before I came to this sport, I have a good reaction, good reflexes. So, and plus I 3 times champion in Ukraine in kickboxing and champion of the world from K1. So, but it's not taking me serious. I'm not like looking for the serious sport because there's no money there. And then before the Olympic Games, I go to National Golden Gloves and I win. And then I turn pro. That's my story.
How did you find your way? I mean, you hit a few different gyms in Los Angeles. Can you talk about the different gyms that you train at, and why do you train at each one of them?
No, my coach, new coach, Phil Paulina, he has a gym from the Topanga Canyon. This is my boxing coach. And this gym, I use like Larson Wallen, is my condition coach. So it's close to me, that's why it's easy to make this.
The style, for people that haven't seen you fight, I mean, you fight almost, it reminds me a little bit of Martinez or Pirog, but it's very original. You kind of fight facing the opponent with your hands, you know, down and your feet kind of facing them, but you keep the opponent in front of you, and then you kind of come underneath with your shots and catch them unawares. It's how you took out your opponent in your last fight. How did that style, where did that come from?
You know, when I started to kickboxing and boxing, I looked in Roy Jones a little bit before, and I tried to copy, but I can't copy this superstar. And I found my own style. That's when I box like this, I see people when he boxes me, he frustrated. That's the main point. So, and I can do whatever I want because it's not like original, not like a standard. You know, what is this? What is this? That's what I'm looking this for. I can't explain.
I'm watching you right now, and I like how you stick your head out there, almost taunting your opponent to throw a punch. Is that something early on in your career that you decided to do, or does this just kind of evolved throughout your career?
Right now, I do before, but right now I have a professional coach who teach me that. That's why. This right now is like better, because before I just watched the tape from Roy Jones. I didn't understand what he does, like Martinez. Right now I have Phil Paulino. He teach me professional how I can do this. That's why to this last fight, I feel it great. I not even sit it down. He not even touch me. That's made pain for like made points for me. Make him miss and make him pay.
What does it mean for you to see more, more Russians or Ukrainians fight in the sport of boxing and getting the exposure they're getting? What does that mean for you and for your career?
You know, Ukraine right now, it's number one is Olympic boxing. Last championships, we have a 5 gold medalists. So I know Ukrainian people is so, like, I don't know, everybody work hard, but maybe more talent or something like that, or life a little bit different. You know, before in United States, have like great amateur box. Right now, I don't see no more. Maybe so good life, you know, if you life not so good, you work hard to the go in better life. That's maybe.
I agree with you that on that there, you know. And
well, in Europe, don't you think you guys get exposed to more styles than Americans do? You fight.
Yeah. Everybody like fight like, you know, like it's like emotional, like a robot. I don't like this. Everybody called me, I fight like a black fighter. That's compliment for me. No, they're serious.
Right. No.
I'm curious, talk about this last fight, because one of the things, I've seen you fight a few times, and every time I see you fight, you stop somebody. Was learning how to finish an opponent something that you had to learn how to do, or did you have to learn, is that really, can you talk about that?
Yeah, I understand. So before, my plan is to make him miss, to frustrate, he not even touch me, and then he tried to knock me out, and then when he believed he can knock me out, then boom, boom, see you tomorrow. That's my thing for me. So I lie to him, you know, I play with him, I like, I may be a little bit tired, or something like that. It's a game. And then one shot, goodbye.
I like the fact that you enjoy this. You know,
I play volleyball, so I do pass for the 5 people. And then I have to watch another team. That's why I can play like with 5 people. That's easy. If like we and my opponents only 2 people, that's why it's easy for me to do like start thinking about this. And I set him up like I play like a poker with him. You know,
right?
I like faking him. That's why.
That's interesting. Like your first sport was volleyball.
Right, I was going to say that.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard that before, where a fighter is coming from volleyball. And
yeah, champion of Ukraine in volleyball. It's a serious. I am master of sport. It's like champion in the United States, a champion of Ukraine. It's tough. And then when Soviet Union like break out, I like was 13 years old. And then I play in university, but it's not a serious. But it stay with me forever. My father is a coach. That's why.
That's amazing. Yeah, it is. It's really interesting in how you're incorporating volleyball through, you know, to boxing and using the similarities of mentality to it. It's amazing, man.
Go ahead.
No, okay. You can tell.
No, it's okay. I didn't really have anything to say just yet.
Yeah, that's why, you know, it's a different sport. But sport is sport. If you like talent in volleyball, football, doesn't matter. You may be talented in boxing too.
Talk about. I'm actually going to tweet out your Facebook so people can kind of link up with you. But last thing, where do you go from here? I know you picked up the belt. You've got the it's the vacant NABA USA light heavyweight belt. Where does that move you in terms of the rankings?
Yeah, it's make me for like top 15 for the WBA. Right now we're working for the fight with the championships. I have a phone call. Maybe it's happening for the next 4 months. So that's my dream. I stay focused. Right now I have a rest like 10-15 days. and then maybe nobody knows what I do. I go to Big Bear and stay like 2-3 months, and then coming in and taking this. So right now I like show for my last fight like 10-15% because I know this guy's good, tough. You know, this guy's never been in knockdown before. He just fought with the Yusuf Mack. Yusuf Mack is like 33-0, 33-5. Nobody knocked him out. I'm the first guy who put him down. So this means for me like, okay, I'm good. So I'm looking for the WBA or IBF right now.
You give a lot of work, too. I mean, you go around and look for good sparring, it seems like. Who's some of the top guys that you've sparred with?
Before I used Ismail Silak, you know him. Ismail Silak, before, he just lost with Denis Grachev. If not lost, maybe he fight with Chet Dawson. But right now, we're not sparring anymore because his coach say maybe sometimes we have a fight each other. I don't think so. It's not marketable because we two Ukrainian guys fight each other. It's not good. It's good maybe like something from Europe, something from United States. It's marketable. It's more interesting. I think so. So, and I use a lot of guys. I've been with Shane Mosley some. He helped me for this fight.
Oh, is that right? Shane Mosley's son helped you for this fight? Wow.
Yeah, yeah. He helped me. He did like 6-7 times for me. He's a little bit lazy, but he very fast, you know, like his father. That's I need looking for. So, and another kid, I forgot his name. So,
well,
6 or 5 people helped me.
Well, I want to send out your Facebook for your fan page so people can like you on there or try to contact you. You also do training there at the Fortune. Is there any other ways to contact you for the fans that they can interact with you?
Yeah, I think, right now it's only Facebook. Maybe I need to open something, try something, but we're working on this right now.
Cool. Oh, well, we wish you well, and we thank you so much for coming on the show, and we hope to have you on again. Yep.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. All right, man. I'll see you soon. I'll see you tomorrow, probably.
Yeah, in the gym. See you.
Yeah. All right, man. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, really interesting, man. He's a really
cool guy.
Character. Yeah, definitely, you know.
He's a trip. You know, he trains dudes in the gym, and it's funny watching watching him train like these kind of sorry, I'm putting out the contact info. The white collar dudes, you know, they come in and they want to learn how to box, but he's teaching them all this crazy kind of awkward style that he's got. And so it's cool watching these guys kind of figure it out, and their hands at their sides, and then boom, like one arm will shoot out, then another one, and he uses these angles, and there really is a system to it for him. It isn't just kind of doing it. He knows how to be safe with his hands down and while he's moving, and he's very relaxed. It's a tough style. I've seen him knock out like 3 guys now. Seen him knock out 2 guys live, and then seeing this fight where he kind of like awkwardly gets the guy to kind of walk into punches and puts him down a few times, and then that final punch, that's just one shot goodnight. And like he said, I mean, he just executes. Very interesting, awkward fighter. I think people would have to be like patient with him to watch.
And he enjoys it. I mean, the way he describes it, he really enjoys it. It's like, yeah, this, you know, I set him up. I do this. I toy with him. It's amazing to hear somebody that is a professional volleyball player, champion, like he says. And, you know, just...
It's one of those things. It's like... It's like, you know, I don't know if you found this in sparring, but one of the things I'm learning is daring to be boring. Dare to be yourself, you know, and just kind of, like Bruce Lee talked about that, the hardest thing is to fully express yourself through a martial art and to really
right.
be yourself, not like try to be like Sugar Ray or try to be like this other guy, but to like, remember like Bad News Bears, like the first one where the kid's like, I'm stuck between my Catfish Hunter and my Vita Blue. And he's like, why don't you just like throw the ball? You know, just do it. And
exactly.
That's what Anatoly, really watching him, and I'm just getting to see him not only train himself, but train other people and explain his style. It's very interesting to watch. You know, it's stuff that you only get in the gym.
Absolutely.
Know?
Let's patch in our next guest here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. You certainly can. Don't forget to download the Google Store app here on Leaving the Ring so you can tune in live and you can call in directly from your phone and follow our tweets, Instagram, Facebook, and everything else that we are applying in that mobile app. But let's get in BJ Flores. BJ, are you there with us, brother?
Yeah, I'm here. What's up, fellas?
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. I just walked in the door from the gym. We put in a good hard 8 rounds with 3 different guys today and just getting ready for next weekend, so everything's great.
Well, hey, thanks for joining us here on Leaving the Ring, man. I really, really appreciate it. This is the first time you've ever been on our show. Before we roll into the questions, let us know what's going on with your fight. I mean, what's happening? Has there been a change of venue, change of date, or has it been just a change of opponent?
Well, I mean, it's boxing, first of all, so nothing's ever concrete until you're in the ring. I was originally supposed to fight in L.A. because I got originally from, I went to Arizona State College. I had a lot of people in Arizona and then also Las Vegas, so it made sense to do the fight in L.A., but then after the areola sickness, they decided to move me to the other one, which is a great honor to fight on the same card as Bernard Hopkins, so I've been in training camp for 7 weeks. I've been out here since I'm in Springfield, Missouri. There's nothing to do. It's cold. I don't go anywhere. I just go to train in the morning and go to train again at night, and I just come and sit in my hotel all day. And I've just been training for 7 weeks nonstop. So the opponent originally was going to be Felix Cora, who we had fought in the amateurs, and he beat me once, and I beat him once. So I was really looking forward to it. And about a week and a half ago, I don't know if he got some kind of injury or something, but anyways, I come to find out he's not going to take the fight. And so they've been offering it to a couple different guys over the last 4 or 5 days, and I just try to stay out of it and just focus on my training. So I have no idea who it is, but I'm just going to show up, and whoever's there, I'm just going to fight him, so it doesn't matter.
Let me ask you this, because a lot of times when a fighter or somebody that's involved in boxing, you recognize them in the commentating seat because of their body of work.
Right.
Do you think that you're being recognized more now as a commentator rather than a fighter?
Oh, absolutely, because my fights aren't on TV. If my last 4 fights over the last 16 months would have been on TV, they were in the Midwest region on Fox Midwest and on the CBS affiliate, but because they weren't on TV, it's hard to get recognition that I'm echoing really bad, guys. So I'm not sure why that's happening, but anyways, just because I haven't had big fights on the network TV and no one's really seen me. They've only heard about me on, whatever, that they think I'm good or I'm not good or I'm a pretender or I'm actually a good fighter or whatever, but no one's actually seen it until you see, you can't believe. So I don't put the blame on anybody since I haven't been on big TV fights, and, we're working on that. So that's all I can say.
So let me ask you, do you blame anybody when they go, how did this guy end up as a commentator? Like, why should we even take him seriously? We haven't really seen what he's been able to do. How did he get this position where other guys have earned that position, like Roy Jones from Pauly Malignaggi to Freddie Roach?
Yeah, well, Pauly Malignaggi, I was a 2-time U.S. amateur champion in 2001 and 2002. And then I was also the captain of the U.S. team in 2001, 2002, 2003. So, me and Pauly won the U.S. championship the same year. Andre Ward and Andre Durrell, Andre Berto, when we traveled internationally, had eight different international fights when I was on the USA team. And I was the number one guy for the 2004 U.S. Olympic team until I turned pro in 2003. So I've got that amateur pedigree, and I think that's very important. But then I've been a pro for 10 years, and I haven't had the martial fights as a pro yet. But in the cruiserweight division in America, it's very, very difficult because there's just not the money in the TV deal in that division. So it hasn't been easy, but that doesn't mean my boxing IQ doesn't measure up. So, and MVP,
right,
and ESPN,
true,
they saw that. I have to try to convince them of that. They saw it, and they're the ones that offered me the jobs. I didn't go to them. So
I'm curious. No, I agree with you on that, and you're well-spoken as well.
Right, exactly.
Gabriel Montoya with Max Boxing. I don't know if you have maybe the link playing on the
– I love your stuff.
What's that?
I said I love your stuff. I read a lot of your stuff. You write some good – you write like a journalist. You write some good stuff.
I really appreciate that, man. Thank you very much for saying so. I'm curious because you're in a position that a lot of people couldn't dream of. Are good, you go on there, and like I said, you're a well-spoken guy, you have a boxing IQ. Anybody that's spent enough time doing fighting as long as you have would be able to – not everybody actually would be able to articulate it.
Right.
So I'm curious, are you still fighting to prove something? I mean, you really want to get after that world championship. You're 34. I mean, you have this other avenue. What is it that you're still fighting for, that you're still trying to prove?
I mean, I haven't proven anything in the ring, to be honest with you. I feel like I haven't proven anything. If I had,
wow.
then I wouldn't have to have
wow.
a profession when I come to radio shows, you know? So I haven't. I haven't done enough. I haven't won a world title. I haven't even fought for a major world title. So there's a lot left to be proven with me, and I feel like with all the different camps I've been in, with, you know, the John Ruiz's, the David Hayes, the Haseem Rockmans, the Sergey Lakoviches, all the different camps I've been in, I feel like I can compete on a world level, and I've always done it all the way through my amateur career. I fought the best in the world when I was an amateur. I cleaned out the United States 3 years in a row and the heavyweight division every single year. So I feel like when I get my shot, I'm gonna come through with flying colors. And I mean, that's my right to feel that way. So I feel like
yeah.
they're ready to push me out of the business until I can't compete on that level. You know, which I'm trying to get to that level right now. I mean, all I can do in America, there's no name cruiserweights in America. When the Chief Coyote was on Showtime all the time, I was calling him out in every press release I did. I called up John Beninati. I called up Gary Shaw. I mean, those guys hated me. I called them all the time. And then when he wouldn't take the fight and Steve Frater said, listen, we don't want that fight, I took the fight with Nick Iannuzzi right after, you know, a lot of people thought Nick Iannuzzi beat him. And then I brought him into Springfield and I knocked him out in the fifth round. And I'm just trying
yeah.
to stay busy, guys, to be honest with you, just so I can stay sharp. Because when I fought Danny Green in Australia, I was coming off a 17-month layoff. And it just, you know, coming off 17 months and then weighing in at 195 pounds, I was just a show.
Yeah.
So I want to
yeah.
stay busy. I can't afford age-wise to make another mistake. I want to keep myself busy and give myself a fair shot the next time I have a big opportunity. And I think that's right around the corner now. So I'm very positive about it.
Do you think at some point you're going to have to focus in on Europe, where there seems to be a little bit more of a market for cruiserweights, or is there, you know,
drop down? Could you drop down lightweight?
Oof.
No, it's more realistic me going to heavyweight. But to be honest with you, there's not more of a market. There's no market in America. There's no market. There's not really
yeah.
any American cruiserweight type of promoters
right.
because they're not promoted. And you know, it makes sense. You know, you got the you know, guys like Canelo fighting Josecito Lopez, fighting you know, fighting Matthew Hatton, who's a 147-pounder and moved up to 154 for the title. I mean, you got those kind of situations going on in other weight brackets. Then you got cruiserweights that, you know, some decent fighters like Troy Ross, like, you know, like Juan Pablo Hernandez, like Steve Cunningham, like Marco Huck, that, you know, nobody knows who these guys are. And I hope to have my own name in that list. But, I mean, it's tough in America. And Don King just bid $750,000 on the Levity Jones fight, and he just bid $1.5 million on the Hassan Halabi fight. So, you know, now he's making noise, and I'm with him now, and I feel like that move was done, you know, because he sees money and he sees revenue in those fights, but also it's going to give me a great opportunity to showcase myself and to fight one of the winners of those fights. So
that's
what we were promised whenever we signed with him. So that's what we're looking to definitely do this year.
That's pretty exciting. And Don's actually historically known for doing these little tournaments. You pick a division, pick up a few guys in each of them. He did it with the, you know, Hopkins and Tito in the middleweight division. Wow, that's exciting. I definitely would like to see that. And I think, you know,
I want to throw out
1.5 and 750. I mean, he's really dipping it. He's not just saying it. He's actually putting his money where his mouth is, which is rare nowadays. And
right.
To be
yeah.
honest with you, a lot of people thought that Don had fallen off. And he had for a little while, to be honest. You got Top Rank and Golden Boy. They're great promoters. They're fantastic. But Don said, hey, you know, don't forget about me just yet. Salomon goes in with a $915,000 purse bid. In any other situation, they win that bid, but only to be outbid by $600,000. I mean, that's not
wow.
that's a very
yeah.
significant amount. Now, we still got to come up with it, guys. Let's not, you know, count our chickens before the egg pass. But I mean, just that kind of money. I mean, you have to have it available to make the bid. You can't just make the bid without the money. So you got to show the money. And he did that. And he said, BJ, you're on that card. We're getting you ready. You're fighting the winner. And you know, that's all I can ask. So I'm just in the gym grinding, being religious with it, and just taking it very serious. I'm 34. I just turned last week, and it's just, I mean, I'm very dedicated to my profession. I always come in shape, and I'm not going to come in with ring rust this time, and I want to give myself a fair shot, and whatever happens after that, I can live with. But in my heart of hearts, I feel like I can compete with the best in the world, and someone's going to have to prove me otherwise until to change my mind.
I got to take my hat off to you, man, for coming on here, and, you know, we're known to ask really tough questions, and where, you know, fighters or even promoters have hung up on us, and he hung in there with us. And, you know, I have more respect for you as a commentator and as a fighter, because you evaluated yourself just perfectly, you know, without holding back. And I think that shows a lot of great character in you, man, to tell you the truth, you know.
Well, I don't know about that. I appreciate all that. I mean, that's how I feel. I mean, I wake up, I live it every day. I mean, you can't be a pretender and wake up every day and put in the kind of work I put in, 4 and 5 miles at the gym, abs, sweat, weightlifting, sleep, relax, chill all day, go to the gym at night, spar with different guys, but consistently looking for extra work. My trainer's got to throw me out of the gym. No rounds, BJ, you're done. No, give me another round. That's my mentality right now. That's all I'm thinking about, and that's how I live my life. That's not just when I get on a radio show, whether anybody's there or not, that's how I'm working every day. I'm motivated by guys like Bernard. I'm motivated by great fighters like Floyd. I see those guys that they train, and if I want to be like that, I have to put in the work. There's no shortcuts at the top. So
right.
Those guys are even more talented than me. So if they're more talented than me, then I have to put in even extra work. So I know that, and it's just, you know, that's what I feel like I need to do right now, and I embrace it, and I love it. So that's where I'm at.
Let me ask you this. Is now, you know, let's switch mode here from, you know, we talked to you as a fighter. Let's talk to you as a commentator. Main events and NBC Sports have been doing their thing, and the last three fights have been left with the main events very controversial. What are your thoughts about this past weekend's fight with Malik Scott?
I mean, what are your thoughts about it? I don't know. Well, everybody heard my thoughts, and I think I've heard every Russian cuss word in the book, because the Russians are like, oh, he doesn't know boxing. But, you know, I base boxing and I score boxing off of clean punching, effective aggression, ring generalship, and defense. And if you go down the list and you articulate on every single one of those categories, Malik Scott was dominating the fight. Now, Glasgow fought a very good fight. He won 3 rounds. You know, if you're generous, you won 3, maybe 2, maybe 3. But, you know, he fought a good fight. He came to fight. But Malik Scott was the better man that night, and there's nothing that anybody can say to make it think otherwise. I mean, it was what it was. There's nothing we can do. But Malik was just a better guy that night.
And trying to keep this out, you know, I mean, everybody talks about wanting to get boxing back on free TV, and which there is nothing free. You're paying for cable network. But let me ask, so how damaging is this, man? This is like 3 times in a row we keep seeing this, you know?
Well, hold on. Let's go back to this. What did you guys think about the Cunningham-Adamick fight?
That was another thing. I thought Cunningham won. I thought it was very clear that Cunningham won. I mean, what price are we paying to have it on quote-unquote free TV if we keep having bad decisions every time people tune in? You know,
it was a very competitive fight that Cunningham won, period. And, you know,
right.
Glasgow and Scott, it was a competitive fight. Glasgow fought very good. I recognize he's very skilled. He's very good. But he bit off a little more than he can chew, and Malik Scott had an answer for everything he did. I mean, I'm sitting there ringside trying to find rounds I can give to Glasgow just to make it a little more competitive, but I do not give a fighter a round for doing better than he did the round before. I still give the fighter who wins the round, because as a fighter myself, I would never feel justified receiving rounds because I did better than the round before. I respect both guys, and I'm going to give the guy who won, who landed the cleaner punches and who did the more effective work, I'm giving him the round, period. I don't give points for doing better.
That's a great point. That's a really good
yeah.
pointer. Sometimes people give guys a round because he didn't lose, you know, he's not losing as bad as they expected him to. You know, oh, he's kind of throwing back. So how do you, when you're watching and you're commentating, are you staring at the monitor, or are you staring through the ropes, or a little bit of both? And where are you looking when you're looking? Are you looking between the fighters, or how are you doing it?
I'm doing a little bit of both. I look between the fighters, and what I look for, I don't try to watch either fighter. You know, sometimes just, you know, human instinct, you watch a guy a little more than the other guy, but all of them looking for clean punches. Now, if the clean punches are close, then I'm looking for the effective aggression and the ring generalship and the defense. But, you know, clean punching has to overrule anything else. You know, I love the fact that the guys move around and they dance to look good, but I only go into those other scoring criteria when the clean punching is very, very, very close. So you've got to reward the boxing is hit and don't be hit. It's not, you know, look pretty or this, but it, you got to reward the guys for landing the clean punches. So I look for clean punches. I look at the monitor a little bit, but not too much. I try to watch the action live because, for whatever reason, it looks different on TV than it does live. I can't explain it. I don't understand it for me, but it just does. So I try to watch it live and call it how I see it live because that's what they pay me to do, call it live, not calling it from the monitor.
There's a life missing when you're looking on the monitor.
Right.
You know, it's very true. I think the last question, or not a question, but the last thing I'd pin on that with judging is it's like the Doug Fisher from The Ring taught me, which is the question, when it's close, you ask yourself, who would you have rather been in that round? And that'll be the tiebreaker. I kind of like that. You know?
I agree with that. Then if we go back to fights like Marvelous Marvin, Matt Hagler, and Thomas Hearns, that first round, you know,
right.
Tommy Hearns probably won the round, but I would rather be Hagler because, you know, he probably did a little more damage. But Hearns landed the cleaner, harder punches. So, I mean, there's rounds we can go
That's
back
true.
In history and look at, like, just a lot of different rounds in close competitive fights where maybe I'd rather be the other guy, but the other guy did the better work.
Look at Mike Alvarado and then Brandon Rios that first fight. You know, you want to be Mike who was landing the more punches, but then bam, bam. Came through and started landing the bigger shots towards the end, you know.
Mike was winning the battle and Brandon was winning the war because the attrition of the body punches, he was physically and mentally breaking Mike down. And as a fighter, you could see it taking place round after round. You can see the breaking down of the fighter. You could see Mike starting to lower his hands. You can see him starting to slow down. You can see him starting to, you know, his legs leaving him little by little. And you just appreciate that as a fighter. You see that and you really take that into consideration. You appreciate that.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this, you know, because you're on a seating area where you can actually talk to the judges. Do they allow you to talk to these judges? Because they don't allow us media guys to talk to them and ask them questions.
If they allowed me to talk to the judges, I'd be fired. I guarantee that because I'd tell them exactly what I think. That would be the last show I ever worked in. I've got some very choice words because you know what? They're messing up these guys' lives. It's not fair. You go to training camp. You bust your ass. You're there every day. You work so hard. You put the work in. And then you've got to deal with all the nerves of the fight, the week of the fight, the eating, getting up in the ring. And then a lot of times the better guy doesn't win the fight. And then when the better guy goes out and he actually performs, he does his job, he should win, and then he loses, he changes the fighter's pattern of what he should be making on his next fight. And that's everything. It's not right to do to these fighters. You've got
no,
to give the right guy to fight. That's why I really, really empathize and feel for these guys because it's not fair. And, you know, life isn't fair. I get it. I understand that. I'm not an advocate of, life's always got to be fair. I understand that. But, you know, the
don't
thing
you
is,
think
it's just
a genuine
fight, be able to judge. So it just really, really bothers me.
Don't you think it's kind of ridiculous when, like, I was at Pacquiao Bradley, and I picked Bradley by split decision robbery. I said, like, they're going to go for the rematch. And Bradley's going to get every benefit of every doubt. I literally was Filipino TV filmed me, and that was my prediction. And
but even you were surprised though when they raised his hand, though, weren't you?
Oh, well, literally, I was in the back row. I wasn't in the doghouse. I just had a funky seat. It was a long story. But and I'm packing up my laptop because I'm already done, and I'm going to hear the scores, and I'll get them upstairs in the media room at the MGM. But I'm trying to beat the crowd. And when they said Bradley, I literally just burst out laughing. I just couldn't stop laughing because I was like, I couldn't believe that they just did that. But they did it, and we always say that's boxing. How do we fix that? I mean, because Bob goes, oh, it's preposterous. That could be robbery or any sort of chicanery going on, and he gets mad at us for even implicating that. But isn't that what happened? I mean,
when you witness decision after decision like that, I mean, what else could you possibly think? It's not A or B. It's A. Something wrong. There's some type of bribery or some type. Timothy Bradley is one of my best friends. We went to France together in 2002. We fought in the Four Nations Tournament. We grew up fighting together. He was from Palm Springs. I mean, we went to National Tournament. He's my boy. I saw him when he lost to Vonis Martirosyan in the Western Trials before he went to the 2004 Olympics. Vonis Martirosyan stopped Timothy Bradley at the Western Trials. And I was there to talk to Timmy, and, man, he was in bad spirits, and he's just such a great fighter. But, I mean, my man didn't win the fight. Of course, I understand that. I know that. He's my boy. He's going to live to see another day. But it's hard to see that because, you know, Manny, for as much criticism as he gets, he's a very, very good student. into the game. He works hard. He's in camp every day, and you got to respect and appreciate the performances he puts on fight after fight. It's just very entertaining, and it's just he represents an entire nation. So, you know, besides all that, though, I feel like, in my opinion, he won the fight, and he should get the fight. And it's hard to explain to people how Timothy Bradley won, but I'm glad he did. But I'm just saying. For real, I'm glad he won, my boy, but... You know, what's right is right, wrong is wrong.
Right. That's pretty funny. I'm like 2 for 2 with the last Pacquiao predictions. I predicted the robbery, and then I predicted Marquez by knockout. And I think I'm kind of spooking the Filipinos a little bit. But it was what it was. You look at it, and it just seemed so obvious. And then Tim came out with the rematch. When they went to the November 10th, they made that big ticket for his media day.
Press conference.
I mean, yeah. You know, it just was not a good look.
No.
But how do you fix it? Do you remove that firewall?
Yeah, I mean, you can't talk about rematches before. I mean, you got to eliminate all the stuff of rematch talk and everything before the first fight, because then it just makes everyone think it's fixed. And, you know, nobody wants to be involved in a scandal, guys. And not to say it was a scandal, but nobody wants to feel like it was a scandal. Like when Thomas Adamick fought Steve Cunningham and they announced the decision to draw, you know,
right.
Everyone thought it stunk. Everyone thought Steve won. Everybody, but a draw, like, it's hard to live with, but I guess I could live with it. When they reversed it and gave it to Adamick, then it's outrageous. It just, you feel like you're part of a scandal, and the feeling in the auditorium that night was very strange, and I imagine that's how the feeling was in the auditorium whenever the Bradley Pacquiao fight happened. It just feels so weird to be, you know, present when something like that happens. It just makes you really feel gross, actually.
I'm not really that down with, you know, Teddy keeps saying, you know, we need a national commission, and he kind of keeps hitting, and I've never wanted to say more government is going to be an automatically good thing, but then you look at this case this week about the, I don't know if you saw this, the IBF and William James suing the IBF in Union County Court, saying that he worked there for 2 years, was fired because he was basically pointing out that there was corruption going on in the rankings.
More government means more money being pulled out of the fighters' pockets, and you know, it's like the school system and stuff, you know, and you make one department and you got to make another department to oversee that department. To me, I've never agreed with that as well.
Yeah, I don't know where we go from here, but man, VJ, you know, we got to get to our next guest, but I'm going to channel Jim Rome and just say, you know, it was an epic interview. I'm wonderfully surprised and really just a pleasure to meet you and get to talk to you. And that's not just because you read my stuff and complimented me at the top of the show, but just very honest. I really appreciate it, man.
Yeah,
good,
you know,
stuff.
We always tell Stephanie, too, VJ, to trust us. I think we need to trust her for once, you know?
Yeah.
Well, guys, check it out. I appreciate all the nice things, but watch me. I'm putting on a decapitation next Saturday night. If you get a chance to come to New York City, please come out and watch the fight. I plan on stealing the show. I don't know who I'm fighting, but I'm in America. I'm back on a big scene. I'm ready to go out there and fight and prove to all the people who haven't seen me fight in a long time to say, man, we got to watch this guy because he's the real deal. So I got the amateur pedigree. I've got the mindset. I've got the work ethic, and I've got the talent. So you guys come check it out and watch, and thank you so much for having me on. It's been a real pleasure.
Hey, man, likewise as well, and keep it up, and we can't wait for the next visit from you, VJ.
All right, man.
All right, good luck to you, man. Take care.
VJ Flores here on Leaving the Ring, and I got to tell you, I really enjoyed this interview.
I didn't know what to expect coming in. And people are kind of down on VJ, and I think it was interesting to hear him have such candor and say, he's kind of down on himself. Like, I haven't proven anything, and that's what keeps me going. Like,
that's
what I think, right
there just told me everything that I needed to know about BJ.
That like, he didn't blink. You know, he just said it, and both of us kind of were taken aback, and I think it really cracked it wide open. And
it almost killed the interview for ourselves, because we had other tough questions, and he just like, I murdered it. I'm not going to allow you guys to ask this one, because I already know what's going on in my career.
Yeah, he kind of preempted it. He pulled like an M&M. And, no, it was awesome, you know, and I think it was nice to hear his perspective on everything. And
for the first time, I think we were going to hang up on him because he killed our interview for a moment, you know?
Like, well, all right, fine. I guess we'll just talk.
Yeah.
No, it was nice. Very nice. But we got to get – I don't know if they're on the line. Is Keandre – are they calling in? I should have
– I don't know the area code. We have a lot of calls right now here on Leaving the Ring, so you got to give me the area code of where they will be calling from.
I'm handling it now. I was entranced by BJ Flores.
Yeah, really good. If you guys missed this interview with BJ Flores, go ahead and find it back on the website, Legal Ring, or you can check it out on our, if you already have it, on the Google Store app of Leaving the Ring.
I'll be transcribing it and printing it as well. That was good stuff.
Really good stuff. A lot of interesting things that he had to say about himself as a fighter and as a commentator, you know. And I think if anybody, you know, if you're not a fan, you know, and I think it's rightfully so that I don't think any of us were. Because like he said, you know, he's not being put on TV. It's a real tough division being in Cruiserweight. There's nobody out there. They can have a significant fight, exposure fight. You know, the lighter divisions are right now having the more of the glory. But his answers were, they made sense.
Yeah, they did. I mean, you know, he's, we're actually, you know.
You go in with a blind eye and then you come out with the glasses to see exactly what's in front of you. And I
their
think
Eric code is 404, Mike.
I believe we do have them on the line with us. Keandre Leatherwood, are you here with us, brother? What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. How you guys doing?
Doing good, man. It's good to hear from you again. We had you on, a few months back with us here on Leaving the Ring?
Uh-huh.
So, you got to, man, this is a good fight. I got to tell you, dude, I'm really excited about this fight. I was kind of thrown back and surprised that both of you guys are going to be mixing it up. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts and your feelings about Hugo, and if you know anything about him, have you seen him fight, or is this going in and just you know, hey, I'm just going to do my job and get in there. Don't need to know a whole lot about the guy I'm going to be facing.
Well, yeah, I don't really need to know a whole lot about him. You know, I've been in the gym, been training hard. You know, he really was a mystery to me before. I had never heard of this guy before, but when I got the call a couple weeks ago, you know, it was no hesitation. You know, as soon as I got the call, I told him, send the contract. You know, I let my promoter do his job. You know, when he called me, he said, it's a good fight for us, great opportunity. And then, you know, in the beginning, I thought I was going to be the co-main, but, you know, now I'm here and I'm headlining the card and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm just happy. You know, I'm happy I'm getting a chance to showcase my skills on national TV, get a lot of exposure, you know, give a lot of people a chance to take a look at me who never seen me before. And, you know, it's just going to be a great performance by me, man, you know. Just everybody be on the lookout for. It's just going to be an explosive performance.
What have you been doing in the meantime? Were you already in the gym preparing for a particular fight, or you had just come off of, you know, in December you had the win over Marcos Primera, a unanimous decision in 6 rounds. So how much in the gym had you been leading into this fight?
I've been in the gym the whole time, man. Actually, you know, I took a few days off after the Primera fight. Got right back in there. I actually was training. I was supposed to fight January 19th. Had an issue with that show at the last minute at the show. I made weight and everything. In February, I was supposed to fight February 16th. And, you know, that fight fell through. My opponent ended up having some issues. He was suspended or something like that. So, you know, I was in the gym the whole time. So I had been preparing for an 8-round fight. So they called me a few weeks out. You know, 10, I'm like, I'm ready. I was already in shape. So I'm like, yeah, it ain't no problem with me.
That's got to be rough, too. That's 2 fights in a row that you got right up to the precipice, you were about to fight, and then they didn't fight. How do you deal with that? I mean, you got to be seriously angry and kind of have to go through some emotions, I imagine, coming down from getting that close to fighting, right?
In all honesty, like my promoter put it to me when we got the call for this fight, he said, you know, we can't question what God has for us. He said, maybe you weren't supposed to get those fights. He said, you maybe could have got cut, headbutted. You could have got injured in one of those, and then we wouldn't have been able to get this big fight that actually meant something. You know what I mean? The other fights were more like career-building type of fights that, you know, fights I could learn stuff in. You know, so, like I said, you know, you say you're happy to hear me and Hugo mixing it up. You know, I'm definitely happy about it. You know, I feel like it's a great fight for me. You know, and it's a fight that can make a statement. You know, I'm taking this fight to make a statement. You know, that I'm here, I'm in the division to do some things and make some things happen. And, you know, hopefully after this fight, I'll be having a fight, you know, for a belt, you know, to get me ranked in the top 15.
Let's talk a little bit about your development. You know, you had your loss with John Jackson. I don't know if you were with 360 then.
No,
but then
No.
Okay, then you had your draw, and then you've had a, you know, KO3, TKO3, UD6, with a guy with a lot of experience. People would look at Primera and go, he should have got him out of there. But that's a guy that goes rounds and
man. I take my hat off to that guy. He's a true vet. You know, people can say what they want to, you know, but if you look at this guy's resume, he done went the distance with everybody. So what can they say? You know what I mean? You can easily say, oh, I should have got him out of there. Well, shit, why he ain't get him out of there then?
Seriously. Yeah. Matt Korobov, supposed to be a puncher, didn't get him out of there. You know,
didn't get him out of there. I mean, I actually, in all honesty, I actually had him hurt at a couple points, but he's so tricky, and he plays possum and stuff like that. He's a vet, you know, so, you know, why get in there and get caught with some bullshit for no reason? You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
You know, I took my time, broke him down. You know, I won the fight easy. You know, he even told me after the fight, he said, you're one of the best guys I done fought. He said, and I done fought everybody. You know, he said, you're one of the best guys I done fought. He said, and I done fought everybody. He said, you actually hurt me a couple times. He said, but, you know, you didn't come in. He said, but I know I was trying to trick you, so I know why you didn't come in.
Well, dude stops Curtis Stevens in the eighth round.
Yeah.
Back in 2006. Then he loses to Curtis Stevens, but he's fought Aussie Duran, Claudie, Willie Gibbs, Kingsley Aikiki. Dude, I mean, it is a long list of people. Austin Trout, Tyrone Brunson, who's not big name, but kind of a name.
Yeah.
Daryl Cunningham. Yeah. And then finally, Keandre Leatherwood. Talk to me about going like six rounds with a guy like that. I mean, this fight's going to be a 10-rounder. You're making a jump. But what is it like when you kind of get into a little bit deeper water than you've been? And you've been six, you've been eight. With a guy like that, and you've been 10, I'm looking at his record.
Yeah,
you've been scheduled for 10, but the deepest you've gone is 6. What's it like though when you get deep with a guy like that and he's tricky and you're getting a little more tired?
I mean, it was just a good experience for me. I felt like, you know, I learned some different things in being in there. You know, I learned how to stay settled and not get ahead of myself. You know, and how to stay composed and keep boxing, you know, because those are tools that you have to learn, you know, during the long haul. My last two fights were both scheduled for 8 rounds, you know, so I've been training for 8, you know. So when they called me maybe 3 weeks out, you know, it was nothing. 2 more rounds. I've already been in the gym doing that anyway. So what's the difference? You know what I mean? I just kicked it up a little bit. You know, that's why I said I'm coming to make a statement in this fight. You know, but in all honesty, being honest with you, I can't see the fight going the distance. Just being honest with you, you know, the guy's frail. The guy's frail. He can't punch. You know, he really has nothing to keep me off his ass. You know what I mean? And I got to see if he can take what I got to give, you know. I want to see if he's going to be able to take the punishment I'm going to put on his body, if he's going to be able to take the shot on the chin, because nobody still has seen how this guy will react, you know, to a nice chin shot. Nobody has really tested this guy's heart. You know what I mean? I'm gonna put him through some adversity. You know, if he go 10 with me, he gonna have to fight. This serious. You know, a lot of people look at it. You know, like I say, you know, I'm not going there to just put on a good show. You know, I'm not going to California for that. I could stay at home and just fight a decent fight on a local show and put on a good show. You know, I mean, this is not a show. This serious. You know what I mean? People don't realize when you get there, you put your life on the line. You seriously putting your life on the line, you know, and I got mouths to feed, so I'm getting in there to take care of my kids, you know, I'm putting my life on the line, and I'm taking it as that. This is not a game, you know what I mean?
Man.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I hear you.
This fight even more sweeter, and I can't wait to watch this fight between the both of you guys. This is a good fight. This is a really good fight.
It really is. I mean, what you have seen. I mean, I was thinking about when you were talking about hit him on the chin. He does carry his chin kind of high. He does. His defense is a bit leaky, and he is kind of a you know, I've watched him for a while. He's kind of a lanky guy. He's gotten a little bit stronger over the years, but he is kind of a lanky guy. What do you see when you look at Hugo Centeno?
You know, being honest with you, I don't really just dissect everything, because you got to take every fight different. You know what I mean? You never know what this guy is going to come with. But, you know, like you said, you know, I see a lot of flaws in this guy. And, you know, we've been putting together a game plan. You know, we're going to expose a lot of things. We're going to put him in a lot of uncomfortable situations and see how he reacts. You know what I mean? Like I said, you know, his chin still hasn't been tested, you know. You know, whether he got it up in the air, tucked, whatever, I touch him on it, he's going to feel it. You know what I mean? I mean, however you want to look at it, you know, and, you know, they don't call me Lightning for no reason, man. You know, I got – I feel like I got some of the fastest hands in the division. I just ain't got a chance to really show it yet. You know what I mean? I mean, so hand speed-wise, you know, the guys, you know, I'm looking at his physical attributes. You know, he has a kind of frail frame. You know, he's long, he's lanky, you know, but his puncher power is very subpar. You know, his speed level, he has decent speed, but I don't feel like if we get in there in exchange, he's going to be able to really keep up with me. You know what I mean? Just being honest with you. So, you know, but I'm going into this fight to break this guy down. You know what I mean? I'm not going into this fight to play games, to, you know, see about this. Like I said, when you going into a fight to make a statement, you have to make that statement. You can't, and then, you know, being honest with you, I'm going to enemy territory. I can't go out here playing games. I got to go out there and kick this guy's ass, because just like you guys were talking about in the Tim Bradley fight or, you know, the Adam Mack fight, you know, in this game, it's a lot of subject decisions go on. So, you know, I got to go in there and handle business.
I got to point out, too, you know, the last time we saw two prospects that are equal and that was really exciting, Boxing 360 was one that put it off. It was Guy Robb versus Diaz Jr. They're doing it again with yourself and with Hugo. Do you think that you got to kind of live up to that match that they had made in last year in January? You think you have to bring it something similar to that effect?
Well, you know, Joel is a great fighter, you know, but I'm an individual in my own, you know. I don't feel like it's going to be compared to that, because I'm going to get in here and, you know, this is, you know, my goal when I get in there is to seek and destroy. You know, I feel like I'm an explosive fighter. You know, I got fast hands. I got good punching power. You know, so it's going to be a definite show, you know. And if he can't take the heat, he better get his ass out the kitchen. You know what I mean?
Right.
let me ask you this, too. You know, I don't want to dwell on it, because I think you've really moved past it. But that loss, do you look back at it? Do you look at the tape? Do you really have pinpointed what the hell happened?
I mean, actually, I don't. You know, I put it behind me. There's a lot of different things went on there. Like I say, I don't dwell on it. You know, me and my trainer, we didn't talk about it. Me and my promoter, we talked about it, you know, because he actually signed me off a loss. You know, he said he seen something in me in that fight. He seen my heart. He seen my determination. He seen how strong I was. He seen my skill set. He seen the speed. It just had to be moved along and put in the right kind of fights at the right time. And you know, he said he definitely see me as a world champion, you know. So I just want to thank my promoter, Mario Yagobi at Boxing 360, for seeing something in me at a time where, you know, man, in all honesty, before I got signed with Boxing 360, after, you know, I was right back in the gym maybe a week or two later. I was in the gym training. I'm about to get in shape because, you know, I actually took that fight with, like, less than 2 weeks' notice. You know, I really didn't think too much of the guy, but at the time, I didn't realize how much you had to really put into it. I trained hard, but I didn't realize this is a 10-round fight. You know what I mean? So you can't take it as a 4-round fight or a 6-round fight and just jump in the gym at the last minute and think, oh, I'm going to get in here and crank this guy out. You know, I really didn't think much of him, and, you know, definitely if the fight could get back on it, if we definitely can get the fight back, I definitely would take it with no hesitation, you know. And honestly, my promoter tried to make the fight for me because he wanted me to get that win back, you know what I mean? But, you know, we weren't able to make that happen, you know. But I'm not going to dwell on it because I feel like that's in my past. I feel like I'm going to move further than this guy, you know. It's just, you know, he on his own path. He on his own journey. You know, maybe we meet back up when it's somewhat more meaningful, you know. So I'm not going to dwell on it right now, but, you know, I just didn't realize how important it was to have a team, a strong team. You know, I went out there more so as an individual. I had, you know, it was a local guy around here. He gave me, you know, he gave me a call. He was like, well, I can get you this fight, Keandre. You know, would you take it? This guy really ain't much, this, that, and the third. You know, I got the bad end of boxing right there because, you know, I got fucked out my money. You know, I really didn't get what I was supposed to. I went out there, them guys, you know, when I went back and watched the fight, these guys telling me something totally different than what was going on, and I could have fought a different fight. You know, I was up from about 6:30 in the morning and didn't end up fighting after midnight, at daytime. Wow. You know, I only flew out there 2 days before the fight, so I really didn't get a chance to get adapted to Vegas time, you know. And so, you know, 12 o'clock out there is really 3 o'clock my time here in Georgia. You know, I hadn't ate since 1:30. You know, them guys had, you know, guys I went out there with, I'm out walking. They got me out walking the strip and all type of shit before the fight. You know, it just was a, you know, I ain't going to get into everything, but that was just a taste of some of the things I went through, and to the extent that some of these promoters go to, you know, that even the people you have around you that you think are for you at that point in time, they really ain't. You know what I mean? So that's why I went back and got my old trainer. You know what I mean? That's why I went back and got somebody who I know is going to be there, who I don't have to question anything. I don't have to question what he tell me when I'm in that corner, because that's what he sees. You know what I mean? That's what he really sees, you know. So having a strong team in this game is very important. You know, that's just like I tell people, this guy Hugo, he got the good route. You know, he started off signed with Golden Boy. De La Hoya brother is his manager. You know, he's out training, and, you know, he's moving. He's been televised and stuff like that. You know, I got the hard route. I got the hard knock route. You know, my first fight was for gas money, man. You know, just because I wanted to get in there and mix it up. You know, my second fight was for tickets. You know what I mean? So I done had to always get what I had to get the hard way. You know what I mean? Nobody gave me nothing. I never got anything. You know what I mean? So that's why I'm going out here in this fight, and I'm going to take it. I don't need them to give it to me. That's why I said I'm looking at this fight. I don't see it going 10 rounds because I know what kind of fight I'm in. I'm in enemy territory. I'm in a hostile crowd, you know, but it's nothing they can do. They can't get in there and block them punches for him. They can't get in there and take them shots for him, you know, because when I touch his ass, he going to feel me. Definitely believe that. When you see him first get touched by me, everybody watching at home, they definitely going to know he been touched. Y'all definitely going to see how he react. And if he react in the wrong way, his ass going to end up on the ground. You know what I mean?
I look forward to it, man. It's a pleasure. You know, the last time I'm gonna interview your trainer, Pete, and father tomorrow.
Okay.
But we have to move on to our schedule. But last time I almost got the sense that, you know, I wanted to hear more directly from you. And Pete's such a character. I really dig your dad. it was nice to finally kind of hear you. Kind of just declare war, you know. I wanted to hear you do that, and
I know.
I'm definitely declaring war. This is not a game. I'm not coming out there to play. I'm coming out there to handle business. Like I said, my life is on the line in there. You know, I don't know what Hugo fighting for and all that. I don't know what's his motivation, but I got two kids at home. I got mouths to feed. So you got a lot to come up against, because that's personal. If somebody trying to take food out your kid's mouth, that's gonna be personal to you, right? That's personal, right? So Hugo trying to take food out my kid's mouth right now, because if I lose this fight, I'm going the other direction. I can't let that happen. I'm going out here to put on an explosive performance, you know, and do what I do best, you know, and hopefully after I put on this clinic, you know, Showtime will be calling me back, and you guys will see me real soon.
Well, there you go.
All right, man. Well, good luck in the fight, and we'll be talking soon.
Okay. Thank you guys
all
for having me on.
All right, my pleasure,
always
man. Thank
pleasure,
you
man.
For your, yeah, always a pleasure. Take care.
Okay.
All right. Keandre Leatherwood here on Leaving the Ring with us, talking about his upcoming fight with Hugo, who we had on a little earlier, and declared war. This, it just made it that much sweeter, to tell you the truth. You know, fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. We're going to be going into the fight schedule, and while Gable looks up the fight schedule, we'll pass in a fight fan really quick.
Yeah, I'm all. Well, trying to update here.
Let's get area code 678. You're on live right now. Leave the ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, how y'all doing out there tonight?
Doing good, brother. How you doing?
Hey, man, I'm doing wonderful. I just want to say, man, that Keandre Leatherwood is a monster. And I'm telling you, he has speed and endurance. The last bum he hit, it needed life insurance. Hugo better watch out. He better duck fast, because Keandre's going to kick his ass.
I like that little rhyme, man. Hey, thanks for calling in, brother.
Okay.
Well, man,
I'm all
they're,
set.
They're coming with force, you know. You know,
I'm probably, you know, I like Hugo, but I his chances in this, I just gotta, that kid Keandre's coming, you know. I mean, I think if it's basically, if this is what Showbox is all about, it's what it's always been about, pitting two guys that say, you know, I'm the guy. No, I'm the guy. And they're both at the crossroads, you know, and what's beyond them is either, you know, rebuildingville And for a guy like Keandre, who's a smaller promoter,
right,
coming off a TKO loss like four fights ago, and you know, or three fights ago was a draw, or four fights ago was a draw. He's fighting for his career. When he says my life is on the line, his career, everything is on the line. This is his shot. And for Hugo and for Joel De La Hoya, there's a lot on the line. This is one of his guys. And he wants to, you know, get, I don't know if he's getting out of the shadow of Oscar, but kind of wants to be recognized as a guy that that has an eye for talent, you know, and that's something that, that Oscar can't help him with. Maybe Oscar can give him an opportunity, help his fighter out, get on TV. But it's going to be up to him to pick the talent and pick the guy and nurture and bring that prospect along. And Hugo's going to show us. Is he? And I didn't want to, you know, disagree with Keandre because he was on a roll. But Hugo is a guy that, that started the rough way too, man. He's come up tough.
He did.
You know, I remember when he didn't have a promoter. I bung around him when he didn't have a promoter. Being a fighter is a lot like being an unemployed actor, man. When you don't have a promoter or a manager or anything, and you're taking punches and you're training, and you know you think you're good enough to be at that level, that's rough. And when I met Hugo, he'd already had, I think, maybe 10 or 11 fights, maybe more. It's a rough business trying to go pro and get away from that regular job and make this, you know, be a full-time warrior so your body can kind of grow into what it should be. This would be a hell of a fight. I cannot wait, dude. It's going to be good stuff.
Yeah, I definitely cannot wait for it and stuff. We're going to patch in one more fight fan here on Leave the Ring that will roll into the fight schedule. Let's go with, let's go with area code 650. You're on live right now on Leave the Ring. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call. Boy, did you guys blow it with BJ Flores. You guys really blew it. What fight could he be going after that would be sensational? A lot of coverage, a lot of money for someone that just moved down to cruiserweight.
Eddie Chambers?
Eddie Chambers. I don't know. Do you think that's exciting? I don't know if that's – I think he's looking at winnable fights. Do you think – I mean, that's a good fight. That's definitely
a good fight
in the mix. But I don't know if they – I think it's Don King usually kind of picks his pieces that he wants to move around. And I think that's what he was trying to intimate to us. So I was kind of dealing with it within that framework. I don't know if Don's plans.
I don't know how much exposure that would really get. I mean, it's not –
It's a good fight. Don't get me wrong.
I
didn't really kind of spend much time thinking about
it. I don't think it would take him to that next level, though. Do you know what I mean?
Of course it would. Of course it would.
Well, I think
who
it would legitimize
really
him, certainly.
Because I'll tell you something. If you follow Eddie Chambers, he's constantly talking about how hard he's working. He hasn't fought in forever. The guy's retired. And he's moved down to cruiserweight. BJ Flores, Eddie Chambers would be a great fight. You guys should have called that up. You guys should start making that stuff happen, man.
Well, I don't know. You know, I'm not sure how I feel about trying to make. I prefer reporting on the game rather than trying to like alter it in that sense. I mean, I guess my PED stuff, I'm trying to alter the game, but in an administrative sense. As far as matchmaking, I kind of try not to be like an advisor guy or try to, through the media, make like fights happen. I'll support a fight if you're throwing it out there, and I certainly support this matchup that you're bringing up.
Yeah, I support it as well. I think it is a good matchup, you know what I mean?
And certain people call me and ask me, like, what do you think of this fight? Like I say, I'll give you a yay or a nay, but I won't call people and say, you should make this fight.
The caller, what is your name?
Jess from California. Also, hey, there's a local fight here in the Bay Area. There used to be great fights in San Jose on Fight Night at the Tank, but it just went away.
I used to go to those all the time. I was there when they debuted.
Dude, I was a season ticket holder there for 8 years. Anyway, there is a local fight going on in the Ace. If you want to promote that, it's at the Fox Theater in Redwood City. But
what's the fight?
It's just a bunch of nobodies, but still a fight.
It's a Paco event, you know, who's held the solo book sale in Fairfield. Remember when we went down over there? And actually, we have somebody that's going to be out there covering it. They asked me to go out there as well and stuff, but just the distance where I'm going to be traveling from work to over there, it's going to be too much. I won't even make it up on time, man.
Is it the same venue?
No. It's in Redwood City, which is it's a few
out there.
About, like, what, 30 minutes away out of San Jose and stuff. But the Shark Tank, man, I used to love it. I used to go. I mean, I was born and raised in downtown, so I used to walk you know, to the HP Pavilion and stuff, and you know, it fell apart because they just couldn't get good names out there to fight. I mean, a friend of mine.
I'm just laughing. Eddie Chambers would just, I think, would pick apart BJ Flores. I think he would walk him into shots all night long.
Well,
I think that would be a tough fight for BJ. I mean, BJ would have to, like, get really physical and really have to work hard in that fight.
That would be a great fight
yeah.
to make. Bring him back on. Let's.
It just really quick here, Jeff, is that, you know, you're coming on here and you're calling for this fight. And I got to let you know that BJ's people are listening to the show. So you're already promoting it. You know what I mean? It's already in their ear. So that's
great.
A good thing.
Okay. Hey, thanks.
Good fight.
Hey, thanks
yeah.
for calling
and,
in, brother.
God, it would be great to bring back the fight to San Jose. That was awesome. Thanks, guys.
Oh,
thanks for having the show.
Are you from San Jose? Are you from San Jose, brother?
Mountain View, halfway between San Jose and San Francisco.
Oh, yeah, I know Mountain View, man. I used to go down over there all the time and work and stuff. Hey, man, thanks for calling in.
I'm going to ask them on Twitter, man, just right now. Just see, you know, you want me to get it going a little bit? I'll at least see how they feel about it, you know, and by
hell
asking.
Hell yeah. Especially
yeah.
Eddie Chambers, the guy that just talked smack and he's retired, for God's sakes. You know, this is a great fight. It was a great fight between two great American fighters, and that could be an NBC Sports fight right there.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, that'd be great, you know. We've seen, like, Bobby Chez get in there when he's commentating, then actually get in the ring and try to commentate his old fight. It would be fun to see if BJ could do the same thing.
All right. Thanks, All right. fellas. Great show.
All right,
thanks,
brother.
Man.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. All right.
Bye.
I didn't even think about Eddie Chambers, man. That is a really good matchup there. It's intriguing. It's a different styles of match. I mean, I don't know if BJ Flores would be ready for somebody like Eddie Chambers, but that's what the fight game's all about, taking a step up and finding out, seeing whether or not you can meet the occasion.
Yeah. I think that's really, you know, like what you just said. It's just really – hang on 1 second. I'm getting a text. Okay, I'm pulling up the fight schedule here, Dave. I'm kind of
yeah, we got to get that out there. Let's get that fight schedule here on Leave It a Ring and let everybody know what's going to be happening this weekend.
Okay,
because we're almost at the tail end of our show.
Yeah, bringing it up right off the bat at the MGM Grand Foxwoods Resort in Manchinsucket, Connecticut, USA, the IBF featherweight belt. Evgeny Gradovich will take on Billy the Kid Dib. Are you hearing that echo? I don't know if that's your new microphone or if it's my crazy ass Skype.
I don't hear an echo.
Well, it's driving me crazy. Okay, and in support there's Willie. This is on ESPN2's Friday Night Fights. In support there's Willie Nelson 19-1-1 versus Michael Medina 26-3-2. Moving on to Saturday at the Hard Rock Casino on Showtime, Sharif Bulgari 23-0 versus Richard Abreu. WBA lightweight belt. Also in there is Gary Russell in support, 21-0 versus Vashelov Gusev, 20-2. Then at the Waterfront Casino in Cebu City, Philippines, Donny Nietes, 31-1-3 versus Moises Fuentes, 16-1 for the WBO junior flyweight belt. And in Wing Hook, Namibia, Peng Luang Sor Singyu, 43-1 versus Paulus Ambunda, 19-0 for the WBO bantamweight belt. And I believe, Dave, I kind of flew through it. At Our Lady of the Lake University Gym in San Antonio, Texas, it's a Golden Boy show. Omar Figueroa, 19-0-1 versus Henry Arad, 14-6-1. I really like Figueroa. He's an all-action guy.
I do too.
Yeah, that's a fun one to get out to. Jermel Charlo, 11-0 versus the dreaded Tom Bob Anderson. And I think that is your weekend fight schedule, my friend.
Let me ask you, who do you think is going to win between that Willie Nelson and Michael Medina fight?
I'm going Willie Nelson. I kind of like Willie Nelson in that fight. I'm not really quite sure. I kind of like the skill set a little bit better. Medina, I don't know. It's
Willie Nelson is definitely the much taller guy.
I think he's the taller, rangier guy. Yeah, you can kind of box from the outside a little bit more.
I like Medina's heart, man, to tell you the truth. You know, this guy can take some shots, and he's willing to kind of go through the fire to land his shots. So I think this is a great matchup for both of these guys. Medina, obviously, he's been in the position getting hit a lot. He's got to adjust to that, and he's got to figure out the taller guy, the lankier guy. But
I like Willie's last two wins. I think they're really quality. And Udell Johnson and John Jackson. I thought he had that loss several fights back. It was Vincent Arroyo.
Right.
And I think he's kind of learned how to be more of a pro since then. I mean, he kind of had an easy one to get back. But then fought two guys that are undefeated that didn't know how to lose, and he taught them both how to lose. John Jackson was considered to be, the favorite going into that fight. And I thought Willie was straight up just more of the professional. I think in this fight he's going to do the same thing. I think Medina's style kind of favors him a little bit. I know Medina's got more experience, but he's also been stopped before by the likes of Saul Roman, and he's lost to John Duddy, and Vanis. So if Willie is of that top level ilk, that he should win this fight over Michael Medina. And if Medina has learned from those losses, which he's had a couple get back fights. Grady Brewer, that's a solid win. And then James Winchester, it's an unknown quantity. It's kind of just a showcase kind of fight. He took both of those the distance, though. I just like the quality of Willie. I think that he's ready. I think he's kind of ascending, and I think Medina, if he was going to do it, he would have done it.
He's got to muster up everything that experience-wise, and he's got to muster up the factor of that he is the shorter guy. He's going to have to get in there. He's going to have to sacrifice what already he gives away with his no-head movement. You know what? I always like the underdog. You know me. I'm going to go with Medina, man. I think the hunger is really there. I think he really wants to prove himself in this fight. I want to see the reaction that Willie Nelson is going to have with the pressure of Medina. I want to see if he's going to be able to sit there and box entirely and not make the mistake to decide to trade. Because style may fight. Duddy was a guy that likes to throw punches and stay there in the pocket. I don't know. I'm not sure Nelson's going to want to do something like that. But you got your pick. I got mine, man.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a fun fight.
Absolutely.
Billy Dibb, I'm tabbing him to go by UD. I think he just kind of outboxes and moves. But, the Russian guy's tough, and he's going to be well-conditioned. He's in actually the same stable as Ruslan Provodnikov. He's managed by the same guy, Vadim Kornilov. Right. These dudes, and I think I'm not sure if he's co-managed by Andre, and I don't want to butcher his last name, but basically the guy that trained Ruslan from the beginning. These guys get good work over at Wildcard. They're well-conditioned. If Billy, he was kind of haggling, and I think he was training over at Fortune Gym kind of later at night while he was here. We'll see. He's managed by a good guy. Mike Altamura has him, or co-managed, I think, now that Fitty's got him. But, the money should be with him for the decision. But don't sleep on the Russian. I think that's going to be a tough fight. It'll be an interesting
Mexican
fight.
Mexican Russian is what they're calling. That's what his label is.
He goes to the body. He does. Yeah. These guys are brutal dudes in that camp. I was watching this other guy that Provodnikov was working with, and I'll put it all in my story. But, dude, this guy had a little like Mike Tyson-esque left hook in the back of Mike Tyson. It was really spooky. So that's a tough fight. That's an upset special alert.
I think so, too. And I'm going to go with the upset special, not just because of the Mexican-Russian of his style, but I think what Billy did, wanting to prove that 50 Cent did the right choice by picking him up and putting him on this card. I think that Billy did was last time being out here in America left a really bad taste in us and as an American and made us want to say, shoo, go back to Australia. I think he comes out trying to prove something, and that could be the mistake and the downfall for him on Friday night fight.
Yeah, I agree, without question. I mean, I think if Billy tries to get too aggressive, it could be bad for him. I don't think that's a good idea for him. I think he's got to stay true to who he is and just box from the outside. I guess that clears up that whole matchup. For Sharif Bulgari and Richard Abril, who do you got?
Oh, man, you talk about styles that can put you to sleep. Abreu doing what he did with Brandon Rios, I know a lot of folks keep mentioning that, but this is a different type of fight, completely different. Abreu's going to have to look for for his opponent this time around. His opponent's not going to be there to be hit. I'm a little curious of what – I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence. I'm not really sure, man. I think this can kind of go either way. I don't know.
I'm taking Sharif Bulgari myself. I think I like
Bulgari in this one, too. You know,
but he's kind of small, but this is the difference for me. I mean, I think he can move in and out. He can do things that Brandon Rios can't do. And they're kind of bouncing in and out, side to side. He's going to have awkward but effective footwork. And he's going to use his awkwardness better than a Brill's awkwardness. I don't think he'll allow himself to be held. I think he's going to be a much stronger guy than people realize. And that's because he works with Daryl Hudson, who's the strength and conditioning coach. And I think that's going to have him better prepared. I think he's going to pick up that belt. And I think it's going to be a tough fight, maybe at times to watch, but I think it's going to be a clear victory for Bulgari.
You know, Bulgari's got to definitely lead in this, you know, or Brill. It's one of these guys are going to have to take the lead in this fight. Both of them cannot be movers, and both of them can't try to wait for the other guy to do something. So, to me, it depends on who decides to be the lead dancer in this one is going to be the winner.
Yes. That's the end of our thing, and I want to send out a final link, and I think people should take a look at it. It's about the IBF. It's from courtnews.com. It's about rankings being fixed. Allegedly, William James is suing the IBF because he was fired because he didn't want to go along with what he was thought was illegal activity that was in violation of the Muhammad Ali Act of 2000. I'll be probably writing something or looking into this a little more in depth. It's not my story. Somebody else wrote it. But it's definitely something that fight fans need to take a look at. Gary Shaw is somewhat implicated in it, one of his fighters. And he's got another fighter that Daniel Gill, who also has an IBF belt. And I'm not saying anything that's going on with that fighter, but you have to look at the association. So, Dave, great show as always. Peace.
All right, everybody, man. Enjoy your weekend. Don't drink and drive. Stay with the family, and we'll catch up with you guys next week, Thursday, same time, same place. Just be sure to download the Google Store app. You guys take care.
Peace.